Okay, got about 2 minutes after the hour. Give everybody just another minute while I get everything set up here.
Nice background, Mike.
Thank you, thank you. Switched it back to the desert. I figured it's less distracting than a waterfall.
Okay, everybody. Whoops, it looks like I'm showing the wrong screen, aren't I? Let's try that again. There we go, much better. All righty, folks. So thanks again, everybody, for joining. If you didn't have a chance to attend yesterday, and I'm just kind of looking down through the participants list, it looks like we've got all the usual suspects on board here. Got a few that weren't there yesterday, but our regular participants. So what I did try to do is capture yesterday in a document. I sent that out or made it available via Slack that captured what we talked about in terms of some of the Geneva issues. I tried to capture the discussion we had around the tenants discussion, and also then that which we got to on Hanoi planning, what the action items and research and what have you are. Anybody have, if you had a chance to look at it, and I know, you know, in the time we had from yesterday to today, many of you probably did not, but if anybody did have a chance to look at it, was there any corrections you saw in that document that we need to make? Okay. And what I will do is obviously allow you to have the rest of the week here to review this one, plus we'll have another one after today. Please send me any corrections that you find with regard to the document. Otherwise, we will consider what is in here essentially to be approved in terms of minutes and action items that came out of our meeting. Fair enough. So with that, and without further ado, let me go back up here a bit. So we kind of left off yesterday with our discussion around core services. We had finished up kind of the discussion on general, and we even got into the technical debt areas of core. And I think we got that wrapped up. And so that left us to kind of start discussion with new features in the core and supporting service areas. Is everybody okay to jump right into that? Or do we have any precursor discussion or holdouts from yesterday that we need to back up on? Okay, hearing none, then make sure Trevor is on board here. Do we have Trevor on the line? I don't yet see Trevor. Anthony, do you know if Trevor's going to be jumping on?
He should be. Let me ping him.
Okay. So we'll give Trevor just a second. By the way, while we are waiting for Trevor, what we'll be doing here after core support, I'm going to turn it over to Mike. After Mike, we'll take a look at device services. We'll have Ian step up. Security, I've got the new information from security. Let me get rid of the note there from Ting Yu. So there is an update to the document from Ting Yu and Malini. We'll turn it over to them. System management, DevOps, and then certification, vertical solutions, test QA, and Open Horizon, should there be time for us to get through all that. So let me head back up here. Am I forgetting anybody? Is there anybody who expected to be taking a look at things from a perspective that I did not capture in our document?
No, just one clarification. So it sounds like the doc you sent out earlier in the week or you shared with everybody has been updated a bit? Security stuff has been updated since that was shared?
I just got the security stuff from Tinu and Malini about 10 minutes before the meeting, Tony. Okay. So I just updated. So I will obviously save this out. I've got the old copies and the new copies out there on the wiki site. So all is open and made available. I recognize some of you may not have had a chance to see the latest updates, but it will be out there.
That's fine. We can just work off your master. I just wanted to double check.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking about today, Tony, is just do that. We'll work off of this, and then I'll make sure everybody has copies. And if I screw up, you can reach back to me.
Okay.
I still don't see Trevor. Anthony, any response from Trevor?
No, he might be caught up doing something.
Okay, let's do this. We'll come back to core supporting services if everybody's okay with that. Let me go on. If you're ready, Mike, wouldn't mind, we'll start with application services. Is that all right?
Sure, no problem.
Would you like to start with new features or technical debt?
I'll start with new features.
Okay.
The first one's easy, right? I think, Kuiper is chugging along. I think we've all agreed that is going to be our next rules engine of choice or recommendation with the deprecation of the rules engine. So I don't think there's anything else here other than we want to, I think right now we've got some tight integrations with Kuiper, given that they pulled in the modules for GoMod core contracts and messaging, whether or not they continue to do that and fully decouple and just, for example, implement their own ZMQ integration and handling, I'm not sure, but that's what that decouple from EdgeX is. If we truly want them to be standalone without any dependency on EdgeX, we can discuss that. But for now, I don't think that's necessary. I think we can get up and running with what they have. It meets the need.
Hey, Mike, just to be clear, so it sounds like the plan is now that that we still would have overlap with old support rules engine, at least for Geneva, and then we'd remove it in the next release in Hanoi?
Yep.
Well, I think what we can do is like we did with export services.
Exactly.
Is we'll drop the rules engine in the compose file now Kuiper in there, but we're not archiving the rules engine quite yet. That makes sense.
So if somebody wanted to, they could restore it.
Correct.
Okay. And
then maybe put some notice about deprecation.
Yep, we can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to ask the same question, and I guess we would like to basically do the same thing we did with export, where we. You know, we've told people like for a number of releases we were getting rid of it, That's still considered non-breaking.
Yep, and there's and still to my, I mean, even if we get to was it Hanoi, there'd still necessarily be no reason for them to use it unless we create a breaking change, and then someone else can go adopt and continue to use Rules Engine if they think Rules is the Rules Engine for them, right?
Correct. Yep, people can always do what they want. Mike and Lenny in particular, I know you guys have been following along with me with Kuiper. Other than the decoupling, making sure that Kuiper, or at least encouraging Kuiper and maybe doing some of that work to help them to make sure it's decoupled so that these are separate projects, is there anything else in terms of what we've seen with Kuiper so far that you think ought to be something we go back to Kuiper with and negotiate in terms of additional features we think need to be in there for Hanoi?
The one that we had a fair amount of discussion around was the whether or not it handles multiple devices and whether app functions or app service configurable or what have you is doing that filtering before it goes to the rules engine and remove that requirement and allow Kuiper to do that filtering in the engine itself in addition to whatever else it needs to do with the rules. That's probably the only topic that we need to discuss and whether or not we want to do that. I think where we landed was to stick with the simple case for Geneva. I don't know about what, Lenny, it sounds like you have something to say for Hanoi.
Well, yeah, we had a couple of things. We said, hey, let's just stick it to crawl right now, which is what you were talking about there. But then there were some, and I can't remember what they were around walk. I think it would just be the walk. We would look at the walk stage for them, right?
Right.
And I think it's still kind of open on, you know, what that is. And then
Yep. You know, I think we'll probably have some wait and see, I think, here. If we put it out there for people to use, we'll get some feedback and see what the things we need to address immediately from folks using it.
Yep, just thinking about in terms of what might be on our shopping list with them. I think we also talked about a UI tool, right, to maybe not replace but augment the CLI. Or was I off of that on that one?
I don't remember talking about the UI. I know that we talked about enhancing the CLI and adding an API to do RESTful calls.
Ah, that was it.
Which the REST is there. They have the REST. So
does it offer everything though? I think the CLI
did
more than the API did, and they were still working on enhancing that.
Okay.
So I think that's, we want to make sure that the RESTful API is on par with where the CLI
is. I think it's enhance REST to match CLI.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Okay. All right. And this is not a meeting on Kuiper or road mapping for them, but I'd like to kind of get some gauge from them about what their intentions are. Things like the decoupling, you know, if we have to think about resources on our end, what have you, but we can have a conversation with them. Anybody in disagreement with what we're doing with Kuiper? Anybody in disagreement with deprecation of rules being on the plate for Hanoi? Again, remember, today's session is not about saying we are absolutely doing these things, not about committing anything at this point, but these are things that we consider to be in the possible for our planning meeting come at the end of April. Okay, hearing none. Go ahead there, Mike, continue on.
Next one's easy, that'll be in Geneva. So let's go ahead and just cross that one out.
When you say that in Geneva, meaning that you can export in Cloud Event format, correct?
Correct, yes, the PR is open for that now.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
This one, are these still ones we want to focus on for all of the different northbound endpoints and protocol types? I know in the past we've left it up to the community, and I think that is still the BKM or the recommendation going forward. I don't see us having to support an SAP HANA integration or, an Alibaba cloud integration. I think we'll continue down the road of providing examples and accept contributions. Like for example, the IBM Watson, I know, I think it was John Willicke from IBM had contributed that for the app service configurable for connecting to their MQTT platform in the IoT IBM Watson solution. And I think that worked well. So I would hope that we continue to rely on the community to add those, unless anybody differs that they think our community should be creating these examples.
Mike and Lenny, just for a refresher, which examples do we have today? We've got Azure, AWS. I thought I saw an IBM Watson out there. Do we still have Google Core out there? I remember at one point we did. I don't know if it's still available or not.
No, we do not have a Google one out there. You've got the three.
The three? Okay. And I know we've got basic MQTT, MQTTS, right. HTTP, and HTTPS. And I'm okay with saying that, you know, these are, again, we've already said since the last release that we're not going to go down the path of actually developing code in this, but having examples as opposed to code in a repository in a regular org. Is everybody okay with kind of continuing that line and saying, hey, we welcome submissions of any of these others? Obviously, Watson isn't there because we've already got that one done. But this is not something that we're planning as part of our release. So in my mind, this all goes to yellow, that it's not something we're planning to do is build examples for this release. Is everybody okay with that?
Yes.
Yep.
Anybody take exception to that? Anybody think we need to do more work here, provide more examples? Okay, fair enough. Continue on there, Michelle Johansson.
So for the support enrichment functions, we talked about this one in the applications working group meeting on Friday, and I think we've already got this covered. Unless I've interpreted this wrong, but with the custom app service, with the SDK, you can build whatever type of transformation that you want. So I wasn't sure, unless I'm interpreting this wrong, this is done provided by, enabled by the SDK.
Yeah, I think the only thing that this comes more out of thoughts about Well, a couple of things. There's a couple of things buried into this one bullet point. Enrichment, do we, I don't know if we provide any kind of generic, you know, enrichment, but I'm not sure exactly what we do for generic enrichment anyways. And then there is enrichment of the message to include some sort of command information so that on a northbound side, let's say you're in Azure, not only would you get the events and the readings, but you would also get some information that allows the commands to be actuated back down to the command service. We've talked about this over and over again. It's always been kind of on the thought list or road mapping list. I don't know exactly how we would do that, and I don't know that we're hearing any great demand for it yet, but what is everybody else's reaction?
And then you have the security of it.
Yeah. Because one does not want to pass the message about how to break the box. Yeah.
Right. Well, yeah, the security or even being able to, you know, call the command service from off box, you know, if we're back to that. I say it's not on the table.
1 minute from an enrichment perspective, let's say you have like 100 light bulbs and temperature sensors, etc., from one EdgeX gateway, would a simple enhancement go from this export service, application service, just that which gateway it was? I think that's important. Forget all the commands, because once you know what's coming, at least from which gateway or something, that would help.
So you're suggesting that we at least export where the data is coming from, is that right?
Yeah.
So in the event, we don't have any gateway identifier.
But it does have the device name and device ID.
You're right, which could be the same across similar gateways set up together.
That's an interesting one. Maybe we do need to have a concept of gateway. I mean, EdgeX instance. Is there anything that identifies the instance?
Right.
Well, and I'm okay with, let me separate that topic for a second, because I think that's an interesting requirement and something we could certainly address, but it would be a new requirement and something I think that would have to come first before we start thinking about how to do it through the app service. So what I'm suggesting
is it's cross-cutting.
Yeah. That maybe what we want to do is have some research there. I'll set up a tiny project that says, what would that start to look like? What does that mean? You know, how do we identify gateways? How do we pass that information before we get into the whole design and implementation around app service to facilitate that?
Yeah, no, makes sense. So, I mean, to me, enrichment sounds like, you know, either A, being able to add arbitrary fields to events and readings, or B, being able to, you know, just reserve like a single field that somebody could basically append another JSON document onto an event. Is that what you guys are thinking when you're talking enrichment?
Possibly. I mean, we were looking at things, at least, you know, over the history, it was doing things like providing more information about maybe the metadata that we have on the device. So it's not just about the key value pairs of the value, but maybe you also want to enrich it with more information of the device. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you want to enrich it with things like additional information coming off of the system, like if we had a GPS location or something like that.
But where would you put that? In an event? In a reading?
Well, I think the idea is app service would have this information and it adds it before it exports it.
But again, what is it added to?
You're right.
Yeah, no, that is to be determined, Tony. Okay. That was not ever answered.
and that was kind of part
of the design.
Yeah. Mike and I's position is you could do that right now with the SDK.
I was going to say, if anything, maybe a guide on how to enrich, or because we don't really talk about it, but it is certainly possible to do the way that.
Well, let me do it in this fashion, because I do want to come back to Malini's new requirement, but on this particular topic, while there is a lot we could do, there's a lot we could speculate on, does anybody feel like this rises to the level of something we need to do for Hanoi? In other words, do we make this green for consideration in Hanoi, or while it wouldn't it be nice to have is great, but I'm trying to make sure that the scope was in realm of what we can do in 6 months.
Well, if you already can do it, right, then we don't have to do it for Hanoi.
Based on what Mike said, it's possible with the application SDK. So somebody like me could then annotate the data that I'm sending outside with which gateway it's coming.
So what I'm hearing is maybe what is desired then is to provide some sort of example. Mm-hmm. Is that within scope discussion? Is that all right?
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Sounds good to me.
Okay, so I'll put that in green.
I think the part about the commands is the one you want to put in yellow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you sure people really want this feature? I mean, are we talking about enriching the data for every sensor value sent, or is this just a one-time thing?
It's up to you. Like, you could do it for everyone. You could do it for one.
You could be doing sensor fusion. If you're writing your own custom app service, you could be bringing data from two together and want the readings from both of those to go up in together.
Right. Or maybe I'm thinking if you use the batch functionality, you've saved up a bunch of data into one reading. You may want to enrich that with a timestamp or how many records are there, or identity, like Malini said, and send that forward.
So guys, my idea came up from this use case where maybe I have like a campus where I have some buildings, some electric vehicle chargers, and then I might want to send it up to a higher level grid orchestrator what's coming from this gateway, which might be from my campus, and there might be another hospital in this town, and then there might be a school in the town. And then the command I don't really want to send up, because what happens with that command might be different at each gateway.
So I think the next bullet point plays into some of that, right? If you're integrating with IoT Edge or Greengrass, you're going to have an identity and start uniquely identifying data coming into your cloud environment from whatever gateway.
Uh-huh. So I think we've got a kind of a new requirement or a new potential roadmap item here, which I think is great. That's what these meetings are all about. So if I, first of all, Malini, if I captured that correctly, be able to define metadata on the gateway or the host, or maybe I should say instead of on, about, about the gateway or host, and then include that metadata as part of the export.
Would it be identity information metadata?
Well, I mean, it could be identity, it could be location, it could be lots of information, right?
Right.
Okay. And I think you probably want to make that extensible, right? Depending on like whether or not you're in a system that's got a hardware root of trust, or you know, might be different ways that you can actually state that identity.
You're talking about Project Alvarium right now.
You've got it all done already, Trevor. So we'll put you down for this. All right, moving on.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, I do hope that the two projects can have a relationship. But
sure.
That's what you're talking about.
So so with it, first of all, Malini, did I capture your idea or your requirement correctly? We lost Malini.
Oh, hi. Well, more than happy with identity, yes.
Okay, so if we captured that correctly, so now to the point of scope, is this something we want to consider as part of, potentially, as part of Hanoi planning, or is this a great idea, but let's defer that until a little bit later?
But Jim, based on what Mike Johansson said, it might be possible today. That's why you mark the stuff above with green, right?
Correct, but we don't have... What we don't have is the infrastructure right now in place to identify anything in terms of metadata on the gateway. That would be entirely up to you on how you do that.
Yeah, this would be doing it in a general, consistent way.
Okay.
Rather than that you wouldn't have to add a custom app to do it.
Correct.
I think it should be considered.
I'm wondering, is it go beyond the app services though, and it's part of the whole EdgeX installation, right?
I think it's cross-cutting.
Yeah.
All right, well, I'm hearing enough that says, again, we're trying to kind of swipe through these and give them a yay, nay fairly quickly. Why don't we do this? Let's put this as green. For consideration, doesn't mean it's in there yet, but it's
James has put something on the chat.
Oh, okay. thanks.
James, you want to say what it's...
Well, it's just, I mean, I think that there's a lot of good work that's already been done in some of this space, and maybe the project that Trevor alluded to earlier is also, you know, leveraging something that Haystack project's already doing. But, you know, just, I don't think we need to reinvent the wheel.
Sounds good.
So let's do this. We'll consider it, but who wants to kind of take the lead for the planning session of outlining what they think this would be inclusive of, so we can make a little bit better determination about whether or not this is actually going to be in or not?
I'll take it because I want it. Mike, I'll bug you. Mike and Lenny, I'll bug you.
This looks like a way to like describe equipment. I don't see a gateway and then a list here. Things like boilers, tanks, back net, lighting.
Yeah,
go ahead, Mike.
No, it's James, but I thought that they actually went a little bit deeper into just like IoT devices in general too.
Well, I think it's a good document for Melini to reference. Let her help define what that includes and not includes by the time we get to that meeting. How's that sound, gang?
Sounds good. Yeah.
So we had, just FYI, we had for our metrics and stuff when we were doing our original Edge software was we had to, of course, have the name, some identifier, and we just used the host name.
Cool.
So we could separate them out.
Yep. Lots of different ways, I think, to kill the cat.
Don't kill the cat.
Sorry. Sorry, Melini.
Kill him.
Lots of ways to eat the cake. How's that?
Okay.
All right. Mike, back to you.
This one specifically, we're talking about the data plane, right? Which, you know, if we go back a couple bullet points, we already have an example that integrates with IoT Edge to send data over MQTT. So unless this is a more native integration, or I think unless we include the control plane, I don't know that, you know, with system management, I don't know that this is as valuable because we already have examples for AWS and Azure to get data to the cloud.
This one comes a way back when history, right? And this was more about getting to the actual edge components of those cloud providers. And I know we've had we've had some experience inside of IoTech with this. I know Steve Osler could probably speak more to it, but I'm not sure that this rises to a level. And when you try to do this, it becomes a bit of a pain because these things are moving targets all the time. Right. And I'm not sure that it provides us a lot of value because, they can easily do this on their own if they want to, or a customer could, but there's not a lot of value in what you get out of that unless you're also connecting, you know, to multiple of these and trying to hit multiple targets with various endpoints. But then why don't you just do it directly? So I don't see this as being in scope, and I actually might think this one turns red where we just eliminate it completely. Anybody feel differently? And Steve Austin, I know you've done some of this work. What are your thoughts? Put Steve on the spot.
just checking that I'm awake there. I wouldn't bother. That's my take.
Okay, so yeah, same page. I do think there may be more value with the control plane or an example of how that looks, but yeah, from a data plane perspective, that's
yeah. But we can revisit it when we have some control plane.
When we know what the hell the control plane looks like. Right. I'm going to mark this one as red unless anybody takes exception to that this was a good idea at one time maybe, but this is just not in our scope and probably never will be unless things really change. Continue on, Sir Mike.
Additional northbound formats. So we just talked about cloud event, how that'll be added. We have JSON, we have XML. I guess I open up to everybody else. Do we have a need for Haystack and OPC UA? Is there a customer asking for this? Adding transforms to formats isn't exactly, it's a fairly simple thing to do, but I don't want to do it if we don't have people that aren't going to use it.
My take on this, it comes back to the data plane, control plane question. I think on the data plane side, on occasion we hear about things like Haystack. On the control plane side, there are things like lightweight M2M and some of those other protocols that might be of more interest. But it really is one of those cases, like, and I've said this before, you know, we've had these organizations talk to us, and every time we talk to them, it's like, why don't you guys build us? I'm like, we've already started the conversation on the wrong foot. If you come to us and say, we would like to build for you, then I'm more, you know, gracious about thinking about how we can help support that. But building stuff for others without real requirements and without a huge demand doesn't get me feeling really warm and fuzzy.
I think we're thinking red.
Well, I'm willing to leave this yellow only in that I think there are legitimate requirements out there for this, but I'm not willing to, unless I hear from others, from you all, I'm not willing to put this ever in a kind of green state until we either have a huge requirement demand or until we have one of these organizations participate with us.
All right, then let's leave it as yellow unless anybody else has an issue with that. Second, next item there, app service configurable allow the same function twice. So with the app service configurable today, it's entirely driven by configuration and specifically a TAML file. And right now, if you wanted to set up a pipeline that does some simple filtering and transformation, you can only enter each one of those functions twice. And where that becomes an issue is with specifically the export. So if you had two different HTTP endpoints or you wanted to go to two different MQTT brokers, then you can't really do that because that becomes the same key in console or the same property in the way that that gets transformed to the struct. So this here would require some restructuring of the configuration to allow you to specify the same function twice. So if you had two exports, you know, I'm on the fence about it. I think if you want to do that, then it's easy enough to dig a little deeper and do the SDK or leverage Kuiper as well, since it supports multiple endpoints. I'm struggling to see the need to add a tap service configurable.
Yeah, I'm until this is just something we thought, hey, we can't do this. Should we be able to do it? And at this point, until somebody says, I need to be able to do this, and I only use, I don't write Go, that's why I'm using app service configurable. So I think this one is yellow until somebody asks for it.
Okay, anybody take exception to that? Next up, Mike.
Forking the pipeline. So right now with the SDK, you can only have one set, one pipeline that comes in that does transformations on your data as it comes through. This would allow you to start doing conditions in that pipeline. So in the case that you get a sensor value, maybe that goes outside a threshold, you could take a different fork of that path instead of just one option or one path that you can take. You can split it into a Y and go down two different sets of pipelines. I think we've seen, at least for our use cases, this would have been useful a couple times, so we didn't kind of have to handle. We ended up what we did is we started creating larger and larger transforms or functions in the pipeline that would have those different paths and a giant if-else statement. It'd be nice to break that down a little further. I think this is something that we'd like to include. I don't know, Lenny, I don't know if you have any thoughts on this one, but this one I'd like to get in.
Yeah, we definitely have examples of in our use cases where it could be useful. Could be tricky too to figure out how to
yeah.
Do it.
So, other thoughts? Does this rise to something that's needed for Hanoi? Do we need a stronger requirement set? Mike and Lenny, in particular, what are your guys' thoughts with the workload that you've got? As you're kind of looking at the list we've got, does this look like it rises to the level of need for this next release?
I think it's something we can include for Hanoi. I think that's one of the major things. This, in addition to pipeline per topic, it's along the same lines. I think if we were to fork the pipeline, that would include pipeline per topic.
Which is below.
Yeah. So I might even move that pipeline per topic underneath fork the pipeline, because it kind of requires the same principles.
Yeah, I think pipeline per topic is something that could be very useful. Once we've got a the broker, pub sub broker, like MQTT, we're using that more.
Okay, can I put you guys down then for kind of a high level? You know, what would this look like? What's the impact? What's the size of this thing?
Yep.
Yep.
Okay.
All right, multiple topics in the SDK. So for GoMod messaging, right now we don't, I believe it's in the GoMod messaging library to support multiple topics, but we're not listening to them in the SDK. Is that right, Lenny?
Correct. I think this really goes with pipeline per topic, right?
Yeah, that's all that.
That's the only place that you would see us use it.
Right. So, you know, and I think, yeah, it's more of an issue with the MQTT or the broker where you have multiple topics, where for CMQ, right, we just have the one topic.
Yeah.
All right. Multiplexer to split out the data from device services. Honestly, I don't remember what this one is. Lenny, do you remember what this one
is?
Yeah,
I know. I remember how this came about, because when we, in one of our use cases, we've got RFID data coming in from one of our Intel sensors, and it's got a lot of stuff in it, and it's all coming in one event with a ton of readings, and the way our analytics was written, it needed one reading per event, and so this was basically, we wrote a little app service that received that data and republished it back to core data broken up. And I think Jim, when we showed that, he said, oh, that could be useful to have a multiplexer to split out the data. We also transform the data now too, so I'm not sure how, if there's really anybody else looking or needing something like this.
Why would you want to do that, Lenny? Why would you want to break out readings out of event?
It was just the way our analytics was processing them. The way the algorithm was working, and it needed them. It was all designed around one reading per event, because the originals that we were dealing with were that way. And then we hook up the RFID, and it was sending in a bunch.
So, I mean, in theory, couldn't you do this with the SDK and pipe to rules?
That's what we do. We already do. That's what we did. We used the SDK, wrote a separate app service that did this. So it's something you can do yourself and customize yourself. This was all about, do we need this as a built-in transform? And I'm leaning towards no.
Yeah, I'm thinking no as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think the part about it, like funneling back to core data, especially when we're thinking about potentially not deprioritizing it, but we may move it to support data, right?
Right. Well, we were pushing the core data because that was our way to get it back on the bus under the events topic. But if we're using MQTT, we don't have to do that because you can publish directly to the events topic.
Okay.
So we leave this there, but just call it yellow. Nice to have, but not going to happen this time around. Is that fair, or do you want to just strike it completely?
Mike?
I'm leaning towards strike it completely. But
yeah, me too.
Love it.
All right, and the last one there is about adding another export function for the ZMQ. So right now, right, we have the ability to export, but it requires the EdgeX message envelope using the GoMod messaging. This would be a generic, allow you to talk to any other ZMQ bus out there and format it for the needs of whatever that may be. So that's what this is, and I think this is a good thing to include. But
so this this was one of the things that was in the export services that we never did include.
It was there,
and we was like, do we really need this? And we haven't heard anybody asking for it.
The reason why we had it in the original one was because from the old Java stuff, right, we use 0MQ to get the data to the export services and then to the rules engine. Having it being able to export it out in 0MQ allowed for kind of the connectivity and the circle back around if you had to, right? You could export out back into the 0MQ pipe. You could also export to rules engine. You could let the rules engine hook up to either end. So it just made for some flexibility. But I don't know that we ever had anybody clamor to say, I need to get the data out in 0MQ fashion.
Because this would just be really JSON, the event JSON pushed onto ZMQ, because we don't know who's hooking up. We don't know what format they would need to be on that.
Yep, and that was one of the flaws in the Java side, is we pushed it out as a Java object, and we had to go back and retrofit a lot of work, and that was a big pain in the ass. So there are problems with doing this in the way we did it, and there really was only the single purpose of being able to provide flexibility around the Drupal's rules engine. So I don't know if this rises to a level of anybody's requirement. Nice to have, yep, maybe, unless anybody could give me a place where they would use it or would want it. I would suggest we strike this one, but you guys comment.
Strike mean red or yellow?
I would actually say red, because I don't think we've ever seen anybody who actually has requested this.
At one point, our industrial group, we thought this would be useful to integrate with our industrial group's application, but comes to find out they copied our message bus code and then took it another level, so it's not compatible. So their ZMQ bus wouldn't be able to use this. So if they want, for their integration, they're going to have to write their own custom ones.
Yeah. There's nothing to prevent you from taking the SDK again and creating your own export for this, right? Just like you could for AMQP or some of the other protocols we don't support. And yep. I guess that would be my advocation, is if we're talking about adding extra export functions, there are other protocols I'd rather support versus 0MQ.
Yep.
Anybody take exception? Be likey. All righty. Mike, let's go on to technical debt, unless you guys have other new features you've thought of since we put this list together.
I don't think so. I think the fork and pipeline are handling multiple pipelines is the biggest feature that would be for online.
Yep, sounds good. All right, let's go down to technical debt.
So there's two here. We'll start with the last bullet. I think we've already decided to strike that. The SDK to use a new persistence service. We don't want to add another service for persistence. Let's get rid of that. And that was primarily for managing the store and forward and all of that, right? So it's just a little bit outdated, and we have a way to go forward with that with different instances. All right, for the improved binary data support, so this one, I think right now we accept the CBOR, but we don't do much with it. So we want to just kind of improve that support to be able to detect a defect and allow for some actuation based on that. I don't know, Lenny, do you have any other examples that you can think of that we've had a need for this?
Yeah, I haven't seen anything. I think this is, to me, falls on or when consider when somebody comes with a use case requirement.
Yep. So yellow. And then alternate message formats for service-to-service exchange. I haven't heard anything from that either. So I'm leaving that as a yellow. I think that's probably not supposed to be a sub-bullet under binary.
This one?
Yeah.
Oops. You're saying this should be a separate bullet?
I think so. It doesn't seem like it belongs underneath the binary. But it could be
wrong. I'll fix that.
Okay. That's it for that we had. Unless anybody else has any other great ideas that they want to add into the SDK or I think these are the major features. And of course, I think what's not in here is inheritance to the V2 API whenever we get there, right? All that stuff is implied. But
well, yeah, I think we ought to call that out up top, outside of tech debt. For Hanoi, we definitely have V2. No, not as part of, it would be in the general or the new stuff after the ZMQ or wherever you want to put it.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't consider it tech debt. It just means that it's just calling out that we have V2.
I think we have that as a
cost cutting
concern. Yeah, I think. I put that in here, but if not, I'll make sure here, guys. Let me check real quick. I think I put it. Yeah, there it is. So if you don't want to call that tech debt, I'm okay with that. But we'll provide, from an IoTeX perspective, we'll provide a readout and how we're going to get this done. In fact, we just met today about where we're at with it and where we're going. So we'll be able to provide a good readout on that.
Okay, and then that would also add the bootstrap if it's not in there, right? You're going to add that to the app functions.
Bootstrap? I thought bootstrapping was already done.
It's not done, but planned to be.
Okay.
Yeah. So this would also...
Once I get these current PRs in, that's the next thing I'm working on.
This would also include TAF testing, so we will make sure that that's part of our readout with you guys. But V2 API, didn't think included bootstrapping, but if I'm wrong there, let me know. Okay. Mike, Lenny, anything else from an app service SDK analytics integration that we need to chat about?
I don't have anything.
Good job, guys. Thank you. Let's see. We still have about 10 minutes before the top of the hour. Ian, you prepared to... oops, I forgot. We got Trevor back. So sorry, Ian. Gave you a false start there. Trevor, can we go back to you for new features?
Yeah, that's fine. So some of these have come in through another channel. And, you know, I'm just seeing some of these for the first time recently. The device hierarchy has been proposed in the core working group. And I think that will probably necessitate changes that are not just in core, but elsewhere as well. I'm personally not aware, I know what the requirement is, but I'm not sure sort of where it's coming from. I have no particular strong feelings one way or the other about including it. It would be nice to have a little bit more context about where the request came from to see if it's something that we should prioritize for the next release.
I can give you guys the context. Two protocols in particular where there is a concept of a device manager, in other words, a device that manages other devices, BACnet and BLE. And at different points when I was at Dell, there were particular use cases or PLCs that we were talking about getting engaged with, and people were asking us, hey, does EdgeX support the concept of a device manager where devices manage other devices on those two protocols? I have not, in my travels since then, have I seen anybody slamming on the table saying we want to do this. And by the way, we tried to do this in the early days of Project Fuse before it became EdgeX, and it is a bear to try and implement. So it is a feature that is somewhat supported by some protocols, but it is not easy to think about it and get it accomplished.
Okay. Well, I would say we drop it then, like make it red, drop it. Because in all the POCs that I'm getting looped into, there's nothing like this.
Yeah, I'm with you, Trevor. Steve?
Oops.
Or Ian?
Well, even if we do, it's I think talking about the device being a manager for other devices is going to be confusing terminology in EdgeX. I mean, this is really a different object to what we think of as a device. In fact, it's more like a hybrid device service of its own.
Correct. I'm okay with that, guys. Unless, do we have anybody online who thinks, wait a minute, we need to think about that, especially since it is something that is built into some protocols. I just think it's a real monster to try and get done. Okay.
I don't know enough about how I want to implement this, but I know we need something like this for the smart grid.
For what protocol, Malini?
Oh, no, I'm not even worrying about protocols. No. So mark it red for now. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because this was specifically about protocols that allow one device to manage other devices.
Don't want any protocol.
Okay.
And you could do this artificially. You don't have to have, you could make one device just look like it's all the devices, which is how we kind of took care of it.
Yeah, that's what I want to do too, yeah.
Carry on, Trevor.
So the next one with regard to the command, I'm also, again, not sure of where the origination for this is. It sounds reasonable. I guess I'm a little confused because I dug into this a little bit, and my understanding is that we do actually have some sort of defined bound on certain values that can be found in the device profile, which then gets sent to the value descriptor. And so I expected actually to see this readily available in some of the example device profiles that are defined, but I couldn't find one. Maybe I'm just blind or something, but
it's optional.
Right? Okay. All right.
So get it in a lot of places.
So essentially the way I was thinking about this working is that it would be defined in the device profile, and then we would refer to the value descriptor or its equivalent when a command is received by the command service in order to determine if the value is in acceptable bounds. Either that, or we could just go ahead and forward everything that we receive through the command service to the device service and have the device service perform that check.
But yeah, again, I think it should be the device service doing that check.
Yeah, because it's going to do that like when it's generating readings to core data or to app services. And I don't think it does it today, but if we just have the device services take that responsibility, then it's just done in one place, both for commands and readings.
So then, Jim, I would suggest in that case we move this to the device service bucket.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that's there on device resources as they stand, and it's on the not implemented list in the device services.
Yeah, that just means, though, that your command service must be written in such a way that no matter how bad of a command you get, you need to be able to handle it, because it needs to be able to handle anything thrown at it, because it's the device service that has basically the firewall, and
right.
That doesn't sound right.
Well, it's just a delegate. The command service is just a delegate to make it easy for you to send that command to the device service. The device service, if I'm writing a device service, it should be up to me. I don't think it's an SDK thing. The SDK should enable it, which I think it does by having maxim ends. If I have a command to set some temperature, set something, and it's out of bounds, what I define, when I write that device service, I should be handling that.
Yeah, so go ahead, Tony.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think we probably should argue that one a little more in device services, because I think that should be implemented by the SDKs. Should be like automatic. Hey, you define a min-max, something comes in that does like out of the bounds, triggers an error. But, you know, maybe make that configurable too.
So I'll definitely move this down and we can add it to the device service discussion. Sounds like most of us are in agreement that this probably is a feature that we don't want to consider for command. The only argument I'll make potentially as an exception to this, we could put something like a hook in place in command that says, well, here's where you write your own code if you want to do something that is going to check, and it's not just min-max bounds, maybe you want to check something else as well, like, you know, how many bits are in the payload, so that if it's too big, we don't want to process it. I don't know what that would be. That is a feature we could potentially support.
I think you're putting too much intelligence into the command service, though. The command service should just, you know, it's just a dumb pass-through.
Right. I agree. Just keep it a delegate.
It's a demux, right? It's stuff in like routing it, right? So it acts as a router. I think, we could certainly add like the concept of a hook in the device service, you know, kind of similar to the way that we've got like a hook to do discovery.
Got it. Yeah. Anybody take exception to what we're saying and this would be out forever? We will add take a look at this as part of device service as a feature. Not saying that's in necessarily Hanoi, but I'll add it to that list. Carry on, Trevor.
All right, so let me just move to the change core data to support data first. I'm totally, you know, open to this idea. I think it makes sense for where we're talking about going with V2. The logistics of how we would do that, we can talk about later, but I'm certainly friendly to that.
But didn't we already agree that this is probably not going to be, Hanoi probably will not be V2, so this would just get marked yellow to be discussed.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, I think we're going to have to, as far as keeping it on the list, I don't think it has to be in Hanoi, but I think we should keep it on the list and eventually do it.
Let me ask you a question. Is it really, I mean, we can call it whatever we want to call it. If you want to call it support data, that's great. But isn't it really just changing the default from persist enabled to persist disabled? Or do we want to do something more around that?
I'm not sure I follow.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a cross-cutting thing, though, right? Isn't it? I mean, device services have to know not to send to core data.
No, well,
that's my question. Is core data today, you can essentially have core data not do anything and be supportive in that it just passes things through to the application server side. Are we talking about actually making it completely optional so the service isn't even there? Or is it just changing the flag from enabled to disabled?
This is tightly coupled to device services sending data directly to app services via the message bus.
I think there's a couple different ways. I think that it makes sense to position this as support data because, first of all, you may not want to persist any of the readings in your EdgeX instance. You may just want to publish from the device service to the app services and let the handling take place. If you do want to persist, then the app service would publish to support data, and now you've got a repository of data in your EdgeX instance. You could also, if you're still using something like 0MQ, you could still use support data as a broker for the device service to publish through core data for some reason, if you want, or support data if you wanted to do that, and then on to app functions as we do today. So I think there's several different permutations there.
Yeah.
You're right that the device service has to be made aware of whether or not it's going to publish or if it's going to post.
Yeah, if it's still going to post, I think you need core data. Support data, whichever.
Because I could totally see someone running EdgeX without support data.
Yeah.
Right, if they're doing the message bus.
Right.
Correct.
Right.
But if they're still wanting to do REST, then you'd need support data.
Right.
Okay, so we are talking, we'll leave this yellow. Sounds like a much bigger discussion, but we are talking about that it's not just about changing the default on persistence. It's about the change in flow. It's potentially about how we set that up in terms of where it goes and how it gets turned on, things of that nature.
Yeah, because I would strongly advocate that if you're just going to use core data as a pass-through without persistence, do your best to eliminate core data from your architecture so that you don't have that extra hop.
Yeah, definitely.
Yep, I'm with you. I just want to make sure we're clear about where we're trending here so we can write it up so we know what the heck we're talking about next time around. So, cool.
Yellow. Okay, so then as far as logging goes, we've got this drop logging service, and then we have support for alternate logging formats. So I guess I kind of see these two as being related, and it goes back to the question that we were having yesterday. I've talked about logging formats and the need to formalize that before, because right now we just log everything arbitrarily as key value pairs. In other systems that I've worked on, you actually have sort of a logging object that's serialized to JSON and then thrown out to something like Elasticsearch, where very complex queries can be run, in which case you don't need support logging at all. Tony has also talked about being able to log to a system log in Linux OS. Has its own format. So it really depends on, again, what we think the target footprint for EdgeX is, because that defines the optimal way to log this information. Whether we log, I think in most of the, at least the cloud-based type of logging platforms that I'm familiar with, JSON is the default. I don't think anybody deals with XML anymore. I suppose somebody could, but JSON is more terse, and so people like that. So I don't know about XML, but for example, if I just log to standard out, then that facilitates all the logging that I need in a distributed cloud type of deployment. But if, again, we're still looking at just having things on a single box, then, what makes sense? Do we actually really need a support logging service? Because again, if it's just on a single box, I just go to the file system.
Well, and then for Docker, when we're running in Docker, I just go to the Docker logs.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And I guess in Snap, Tony, where would you?
Yeah. I mean, it's effectively the same thing, right? So by default, stuff gets written to journal.
Right.
And there's a Snap view of those same logs. So I'm fine with this. I mean, we turn off support logging in the Snap by default and just write.
So does the logging service then just become a logging module that we bring into each service so that it can just, you know, we have a common way of dealing with logging, but it's just dropping things to a file?
Well, I think it's we have a standard out logging now I think works.
Okay.
I definitely think we should keep standard out because it provides flexibility forward. Writing to either the journal like Tony's talking about, that would be new functionality. And maybe that's something if we're starting to move formally toward having a distributed footprint, then the device service, for example, might log to the journal, whereas all the other services may log to standard out. Who knows?
Tony, is it that the snaps just redirect what's coming off of standard out to the journal?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So then that should be what we do then is just standard out.
Yeah. Most people will use like a Docker logging driver, and they'll do like log aggregation between a bunch of containers on a bunch of different machines and send that up to like Elasticsearch and things like that. And so, you know, having a logging service, I don't think has a lot of value if people can install logging drivers on their Docker instances to aggregate logs.
Yep.
Okay. So I'm hearing consistency that we want to drop logging service. My only question is, so we've got a lot of code in every service now that says call the logging service.
It's all in Bootstrap now.
Okay. So it's in Bootstrap. So we just have to change Bootstrap to do what? Just drop it to the standard out.
Yep. Just to configure it for standard out.
Yeah. Just disable remote logging.
Yep.
Yeah.
And file logging. Yeah.
So do we drop that from the configuration?
Right? I think, yeah. I got to do point out, though, again, this has to be pushed to after Hanoi, because this would be, when dropping the logging service, be a breaking change?
Yeah. Yes, it would. Yeah.
Unless we pull our standard notice that it's deprecated in Geneva, and move it in Hanoi.
Like we've been doing with the rules and export services?
Yeah. But I guess my only question there is, so when we say drop logging service, I think that we basically are dropping remote logging, right? So the service today will write to a file. Like you actually give a file in the configuration. So they do both. They write the standard out and the file?
Well, right now I think no matter what it's done, it's going standard out and to either remote or file.
Yeah. And we want to basically preserve that standard out logging and file and get rid of the remote logging to the actual logging.
I think we can drop file too.
I'd like to see us keep that. I think that is useful.
If there are people who think we should keep it and some would think not, can we just make this configurable and say,
it is.
Okay.
It is configurable.
It is. So you could, what do you do? Just not specify a file name?
That's the way it's set up now. If you don't,
can you do both, Lenny?
Standard out. Yes. Well, standard out's always there.
Okay.
Got it. And so if you don't provide a login, if remote is off and you don't provide a file, it just does standard out. If you provide a file, it does standard out and the file.
That's my understanding.
Yes, okay. That's correct.
And I think we want to preserve that and just get rid of the send to support logging.
Okay, so if I got this correctly, so we are removing remote logging service. We're going to Bootstrap, drop to standard out, and optionally a file.
Say write to standard out.
Yeah.
Okay. And we are putting this in green because we're just marking it as non-backward compatible at this point and saying we're deprecating it. So we've got some work to do there, but we're not going to fully drop it until the next release. Is that correct? Is that what I'm hearing?
I think that makes sense. I mean, is anybody?
Yeah, it totally does because we can configure this right now to do this and not run the logging service.
Yes, you could do this today. That's right.
Yeah. And so we can do that, drop the logging service out of the compose file in Hanoi, or we could do it in Geneva if we wanted to. And then, but still, just like the other one, just like the other services, somebody really wants it, they can bring it back until we say it doesn't, it's archived.
Is support logging enabled by default in the compose files today?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. So I've got the right pieces in green and yellow there.
There's also probably a UI implication here, because I'll bet they've written a UI to be able to query the logging service.
Yeah, they have. I know, because I just saw, by the way, the UI is looking really nice, guys.
Are we discussing the UI at all today?
I asked a couple of folks who have got a little bit of insight into what the biggest changes are: application services and scheduling. They've cleaned it up a lot as well. I will ask Gavin to maybe come in and present during an architect or TSE meeting. Is that fair, Tony?
That's fair.
Okay. So I will check with the UI team. If they're like, wow, that's going to really be a problem, we may have to kind of leave things from a compatibility standpoint for this release. We can mark it deprecated, but we might have to leave it in place and then pull it all out in Hanoi.
Well, again, as Lenny said, if someone is using the UI, then they can just alter the Docker compose file to run support logging.
Yeah, but that's getting ugly, Trevor. If we're gonna provide the logging and then you have to know to go change the compose file to put it back in, that just sounds ugly to me. I'd rather do it the opposite, that people who know how to do it would just remove logging and not use the UI.
Yeah, let's ask them. Let's check with them and we'll see.
Yep. I'll take it as an action item.
One question I had on the UI. So somebody, you know, just kind of quick unrelated question. Somebody pinged me about the UI and the snap. And I also looked at like the UI and how it gets used in Docker Compose. And one of the things I noticed is just the database initialization and how it works. And I noticed that there are some hard-coded credentials in that database initialization script. So this is just one for Malini. Like, I know we were doing some security, like another redo of a security assessment. Have we looked at the UI?
No. Good point.
Okay.
Thank you, Tony.
You're welcome.
Trevor, do we then mark this one as red since we're seemingly kind of taking care of it, or do you think there's other ultimate?
Well, no, because I think there's more to discuss on this. And the reason I say that is because even though you're logging to standard out, there is a certain structure that is necessary for that logging. So in the particular environment that you're in, like again, right now we have key value pairs. But if you're going to log into something like Elasticsearch to make it queryable, you want it to actually be a structure, like a logging type. Tony's journal format may be completely different. So I think that there's probably room to investigate a format or a structure for the actual log. Maybe we do an abstraction whereby someone can configure which format they would prefer. So I think there is a little bit more work that needs to be done there.
So interestingly, back to our previous project, we used logs for us go package, which I think had all that built in to structure it.
How many dependencies does it have?
I don't remember now.
There's a log for us, so I have that right.
Yeah. Is that what it was called, Mike? Logging for us? Let me look it up. I'll send the link in the
log for us.
Cool. So yeah, I think having this be yellow makes sense.
I think it was
that. I've pulled the other logging formats. It sounds like we're not really considering that, it's just the structure. Is that correct, Trevor, from your perspective?
Yeah.
Anybody take exception to that? Carry on, sir.
The automatic migration of devices between device services. I think eventually we were going to need this. Whether or not we want to do it for Hanoi is up in the air, but there was a presentation in the device service working group that I did, I don't know, 2.5 months ago now, where I went through a whole slide deck that I had 3 different proposals for how we could handle this. I don't know if it's something that we're ready to take on right now, given everything else, but whenever we decide that we want to do this, I'd be in support of it.
Ian, you know, I know we had an issue with at least one of the device SDKs where it still wasn't possible to run multiple instances of a specific device service. Have we fixed that? Are both of the SDKs now aligned?
I don't know whether that particular issue has been resolved yet. I think it has.
What was the question again?
Well, the question is, so whether or not you could actually run more than one instance of a specific device service, like device REST. And
right.
One no. of, I believe the CSDK supported it in a similar manner that application services supports it, but the mm-hmm. Go SDK didn't. So
I've not seen anything there. Because all we do in app service, in the app functions SDK, is append the profile name that you're using to the service key to make it unique.
Yeah.
Give it a unique service key.
Right. And I think, Ian, what you did with device SDK C was like have just an instance number that you append. Is that correct? Maybe we put this on the list for like Monday's working group meeting. And so I guess I agree with you, Trevor, that like I think this at some point this might be a use case that somebody would want. So I don't think we should drop it, but I don't think it's anything we want to do in Hanoi. So yellow seems appropriate.
Yeah, I think yellow is good.
Yeah, the issue is still open for the Go SDK on that particular thing.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Ethan.
Trevor, last one.
Let's see. Core commands. Send commands to devices based on label. Yep. I remember seeing this come in as an issue. Probably wouldn't be that hard to do. I don't have strong feelings about it. Anybody else getting any kind of requests along these lines?
Yeah. What? Anybody have the use case behind this or potential use case?
Is there an issue number?
Yeah, I think there's one in EdgeX Go. Let me see if I can go find it. Or maybe it's core contracts.
Please don't tell me it's got JP White MN on it. And I don't remember what it was.
Oh, it's 1884 in EdgeX Go.
There was a discussion about the sort of all variants where you could send a command to all devices. And it was felt that maybe that wasn't a particularly useful thing, and doing it by label might be more useful, but not necessarily something that we need to support.
Yeah, that's what he's trying to do. He's trying to actuate a whole group of devices, and he wants to use a label to do that.
So it sounds like nobody's reacting to this like, wow, why would you ever want to do that? But it's not something that's a burning bridge. So something we maybe keep in the backlog, but not address right away. Is that
fair? Yeah, I just throw it in the icebox.
Yep, got it. All right, and with that, I think we are done. Trevor, anything else that you want to talk about? Anything else that came up in your thought process for core or supporting, I guess?
No, nothing further.
Okay. Folks, it is 15 after the hour. May I recommend we take a 10-minute break and rejoin at 25 after the hour, and we'll get into device services.
All right.
Okay. Yep.
Great. Thanks. No.
Testing. Hello, hello.
Yep.
There we go. Sorry, everybody. Microphone switch over. I was running out of juice. All right. There's some coronavirus dad jokes for you. Give you something to laugh about during these tough times. Ian, are you prepared to get into device services?
Oh, yeah, okay.
Take it away, sir. I put this one back on the list from what we talked about earlier, so I just dropped that one on.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, I guess we can just set that green because that's sort of on the list anyway.
Yeah, there's an issue for that, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Cloud event import, I suspect, is something that that we should be going for, given its appearance in the northbound side.
Intel, how important is this? Because I know at one point Brad Corian really thought this was important. Are you still seeing a need for that at the southbound side?
Money, I'm not sure. I mean, the only point of a cloud event is it goes to the cloud.
I mean, potentially, I guess the one you would put this on would be the REST and MQTT device services, because somebody might want to try and import their events that way.
Is this something, though, it's kind of like just another format, right? I mean, we could show examples about how to do it in the device service, or do we really need a device service that handles this?
I think the former. I think if somebody really wants it, it's trivial to write a device service to do it.
I mean, I just can't see, for example, I can't see creating a Modbus device service that brought in cloud event, right? And it would be something like REST or MQTT.
Right.
That is just an example of at that point.
Yeah. I mean, you'd have a device service that ingested a cloud event, but then it would have to basically take that cloud event and turn it into a native event readings.
And if right now, if you wanted, you could do this with REST. It would just, the cloud event would be the JSON value in the event that got put in. And you could do it today, because that's basically how we, for all our use cases that depend on a JSON object, we're just sending in the JSON string, and that ends up being the reading value.
Yeah. So I would say strike this one. Red.
Would it be potentially enhancements to specific services like REST and MQTT, or would you think this would be a dedicated thing of its own?
No, you kind of do it. I think what Lenny's saying is you can just basically take the cloud event and stuff it into a string.
Done. As the value, because it'll be just encoded in JSON as the value. You set up a profile, you customize MQTT or REST just like you do anytime you're going to use it for your use case with a device profile, defining the device. And right now the REST one has a generic sample called JSON. You could just post it to the JSON device resource and you would get this would go through up to the app services.
Okay, so maybe this is basically a doc issue then.
Like any JSON object, you can do it this way.
It's a wrapping rather than a translation.
Right.
Yeah.
Technically.
Anybody against turning this one red? Okay. Moving on. Ian?
Okay. Data filter design, that's something that we're on the hook for already. And I think that goes forward. We're essentially going to replicate the filtration stuff that you can do in App Service so that you can hook it in at a different level. I think that's it.
So Ian, do we need to, at the readout, do we need to provide kind of a high level what this entails, or is this one, I know we've kind of done some of this already in some of the IoTech services, is this something that's pretty straightforward and it's just green and we're going to do it?
Yeah, but we've really not got started on it yet.
Okay. So in particular, Tony, looking to you, would you want to kind of chat a bit about more of this at the planning meeting to understand more of the details, or is it just, we got to do it, we'll figure it out as we go?
I think I'm fine. I think as long as we've got the use cases defined, I think I'm fine with this one. I guess I probably need to look at like how the app service filtering works.
Yeah, I think in an ideal world, we'd be able to reuse a lot of the app service stuff. Certainly, yeah. In the Go SDK, certainly. The C SDK, unfortunately, is all going to have to be written from scratch.
So to that point, maybe that last bullet point, do we need to have maybe Lenny and Mike get with Ian, Tony, Steve to just chat a bit about that and see, this might be a bit of a stumbling block that would go yellow where versus the rest of it goes green. But we want to kind of do a little bit of a readout on what's there in app services and how reusable it is.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, we could. I mean, I think the one thing that I think might be, you know, is somewhat interesting, right? App services, at least as I understand it, is built around a pipeline model. Mm-hmm. And device services isn't really, like, doesn't really have a concept of a pipeline. But yeah, I think.
Well, its pipeline's very, very short. It's empty. It just goes to core data. So you could put a pipeline in before that you could, push right. The data through before it gets pushed to core data.
Yeah.
That's where I'd see it working. Yeah.
I mean, I think this, you know,
so what
requires an ADR, right, at some point. But yeah. I think, if we need to sync up, maybe we put this on one of the device service working group meetings before the virtual face-to-face.
I think this was another one of Brad's things. And what it allows you to do is, you know, filter out stuff prior, right. You know, that you don't really, you know, stuff you just don't want to clutter.
I mean,
it's expensive kicking stuff up the chain, then you just discard it, basically. Right. It'd be better off discarding it.
And this is the way to get, I mean, we would definitely look at the configurable pipeline stuff we did for app service configurable so that it could just, you have some out of the box filter functions.
Right. I think it makes sense.
Somebody could configure.
I mean, you can actually, you know, if you want, this is kind of like discovery. You could implement this today. But what this is talking about is actually providing hooks in the SDK that makes it easier for people to do it. So,
right. Well, and so that you wouldn't have to, you could do this using one of the existing device services.
Yep, exactly. I
think you guys got lots to talk about.
Okay.
What's in the green? We look forward to the readout there. Next one, Ian.
Okay. I think Southside probably falls into the same bucket as the equivalent thing on the north side. We welcome contributions, but I don't think we've got particular plans to be doing any of that.
Hear, hear. Totally agree.
Make it red.
I think we've spoken about...
we already killed this one.
It's a hierarchy, yeah. Downsampling. Downsampling, I think, is something that we do want to do.
And again, I think you could implement this, but I think, you know, I guess what we need to want to figure out, Ian, is are we talking about just doing this for asynchronous readings or auto events? Or so, you know, we probably should do a little bit of brainstorming on like what are the specific use cases we're looking to implement here.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's basically load shedding in general. So if you've got too much configured in terms of auto events for the system to cope, you want it to be able to, you know, to fall back gracefully on that. and Ditto if you're getting a lot of async readings, and Ditto if you're getting a lot of requests in through synchronous readings. You know, you need to be
got it. So you're thinking not necessarily like on a per like resource basis, but more as on a device service basis.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I mean, can Core Data respond with a busy return code today?
No.
Okay. Well, again, I think, you know, I think this should stay on there. I'm not 100%. Yeah. Thank you, Jim. I was just going to say maybe make it yellow.
So the thing about the pipeline we were just talking about, this could be something in there that could handle this for you. Maybe it's just a kind of like something that's counting, keeping track of how fast things coming together, and then say, hey, you have some threshold, and it starts.
Sure. Like a global, like, you know, global messages to Core Data or global events, right? Because every reading push to Core Data is wrapped in an event, so you could do some downsampling on around events.
I would think that potentially, I'm not positive about this, but potentially some of this might also be a bit dependent on some of the metric stuff that we're thinking about doing, right? If you started to see the service fold under the weight of whatever's going on from like a memory or something, you might take a shot at downsampling. So there are multiple reasons to downsample. So that kind of goes to use case and technology we've got underneath the covers. So I'm okay with just leaving this one yellow for right now until we get a little bit further down the road on some of this, but you guys tell me.
Yeah, and I mean, I asked about whether Core Data responded with like a busy, you know, because typically that's like another way that you would do downsampling, right? Is, hey, you know, the layer above me said, hey, wait a minute, you're killing me, back off.
Yeah, I'm full, yeah.
But yeah, let's leave it yellow. Sounds good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just wondering now whether the HTTP server that we use, is it the Gorilla Mux?
Yes.
Whether that allows any control on the, obviously, like maximum simultaneous connections, or does it just accept until your hardware falls over?
That's a good question. I would imagine it would probably have
in a number of places.
Well, we could put that down as kind of a research item as part of this when we get to it. But that might be, you know, if there's stretch time for stretch goals in the next release, maybe that's a research project for somebody. But even if we were able to get an answer on that, I'm not sure we'd be able to implement something on top of it right away.
Okay.
But I like the idea. Moving onward there, Mr. Ian.
I don't know. I'm not sure what you would really be doing in this scenario.
So I think that this, again, like came from the Chandler face-to-face where we were talking about array readings, and someone in the room brought up the point that, hey, we should make sure that we don't run the services out of memory, right, by sending giant arrays. So I think this was a more of a general topic, Jim, was just that, you know, should we be looking at our services in general from an architectural standpoint and looking at being able to define max number of requests or max number of elements in an array or max number of commands. The device service SDKs already do this in a, you know, for some things that could be limited. So I don't think this.
One of the difficulties there is if you want to enforce array cardinality, probably by the time you've looked at how big the array is, it's too late. You've unpacked it. Yeah.
Well, I think from my perspective, you guys tell me if I'm wrong, this comes from two perspectives. Part of this we just talked about with, where was it? This guy, right? So it's command down, but then the other part is from the data sensing up. You know, I've always...
This is different, Jim, than... So we talked about like bounds on readings, right? Like values of readings. So I think that was what we talked about before.
Okay.
This is really just...
I saw the denial of service and I assumed that was part of what we're talking about here, but okay.
Yeah. So for instance, like your protocol driver in a device service can hand back a number of readings. Like how many can it hand back? Like what's the maximum number it can hand to the SDK before the SDK says no? Or, you know, the array readings that we support, how big of an array can you use? Is there a max bound? And do we want those configurable?
So I guess I come back to my original. So I was thinking this would be something like, if I really wanted to kill EdgeX today, I don't think I'd muck around with some of the other things if security is in place. I would just use the RESTful device service and just flood the hell out of that thing. And all of a sudden the whole system would crash. Is that the kind of thing we're talking about?
Yeah. I mean, that's one area, right? So, you know, what's max content size, right? And we're checking content length, you know. These are all things where you can hammer the system and get buffer overruns and poke holes in the system potentially.
Okay.
Yeah, so again, this could be something that's more globally applied in the general service configuration. How large a request are you prepared to deal with?
It's a REST QoS in effect, applicable to anything that has a REST interface on it.
Yeah, and I think we had this, like, we talked about this in the last architecture meeting, Jim.
Yep.
And I think we had kind of, our recommendation was, hey, each of the work groups maybe should take a look at this.
Is that something we need to think about right away? Or is this yellow?
I think it's green in the sense that we should definitely do something. It might not be a hugely sophisticated or targeted setup that we end up with, but you should certainly be able to get some low-hanging fruit.
So maybe a design target or design idea through Hanoi?
Yeah, I think our goal should be to understand the issue better and be able to articulate it better, and then maybe have, you know, out of that research, we may have some action items. But I don't think we can say, oh yeah, we're going to fix it all in Hanoi. I think that's unrealistic. So,
yeah, agreed.
Okay. Anything else on that? Okay. Next up.
Okay. I'm pretty sure we're doing that. Caching that information. I don't think that's a thing.
Yeah, we already do that.
Yeah.
So you're saying when you say we're already doing that, it's done. Sorry, yeah, I took that as we're going to need to do that. Okay.
No, done. So you can get rid of that one.
Got it. And the last one, Ian.
Well, I think that the CLI should allow for fairly straightforward device removal.
What do you mean by that?
Well, once the CLI is in, you'll be able to remove a device by just asking it to do it.
Well, right, you can do it by REST today. CLI is just doing the REST call for you.
Absolutely right.
So done.
I think this one came about before we started doing the whole blacklist. I think this is kind of OBE, but I could be wrong there, guys, unless somebody has something else they want to add to this for context.
Yeah, I think that can go.
What is that word, OBE?
Overcome by events. That's some of my military slang coming out again, everybody. If you don't have at least an acronym in your sentence, you didn't survive in the military.
Well, it's Order of the British Empire from this side.
I like that even better. Okay, tech debt. The only one I had for device services, Ian, was the SDK alignment here. Is that something we want to explore as part of this release? I can't imagine we are going to solve all this, especially if we're considering device service SDK and app functions SDK as opposed to the Go versus C. What you guys tell me?
I think we're already doing part of this, right? I mean, the filtering would be one example of this. So, you know, the idea really is that, you know, I mean, I don't think anybody sat down and said, looked at the two SDKs and called out the differences between them. You might want to do that, but I think filtering is going to start to bring them closer together.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. I think we're doing it where it makes sense, right? and aligning where we can. I don't think it needs to be identical or expect there to be an architectural be the same, but you know, obviously the V2 API is going the bootstrapping and making sure we give the appearance of the SDKs being similar from a surface level for the developer. I think we're doing that or on the track to be doing that.
Is it fair to say it that way, guys, and move this to red?
Okay. Well.
Sure. Yep.
Ian, anything else on the device server side or from anybody? Now for the easy one, security. Ting Yu, Malini, I've got your new list here. I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to kind of color code it or clean it up a bit, but hopefully this will suffice. Do you guys want to start with new features or tech debt?
Well, let's start with the new features. I think this is probably a little bit high level, and it will affect our progress or our decision on the technical side as well. The first part that is they created the hardware security storage design, and Brian has been working on this part for a while, and I think he is...
He's on the call.
On the call, yeah. So I think basically if he's okay to work on that, then we are okay.
Right, and those first three bullets are the same thing, correct?
Yeah, because
yes, they're all related. Yeah, the formatting kind of went bust here.
Yep.
Yeah, sorry, but a little dot means point, a little circle means subpoint to that. So I didn't have a chance to kind of reformat things. So we're saying this one is green. Is that what we're saying, right?
Yes, that's you.
Yeah, and you almost could drop the first line, right? Hardware's or the one of the two, right? It's really create the design, and the design is enables you to protect the Vault master key. But yeah, leave it like that. That's good.
Okay. And I've been communicating with the folks in the security group. ARM has said they want to come in EdgeX, and this is one of the things they really want to work on. Obviously, with their root of trust versus TPM. I'm not going to hold my breath. This is about the seventh or eighth time I've gone around with ARM, but we'll see. So hopefully Malini, Tingyu, Brian will get you some help on this one as well, if you want it. Maybe that's a loaded question. Next one, Tingyu.
Okay. The next one, that is about ensuring the service running as expected or authorized, and with the DevOps assistant. I think right now, probably we may have some question around that, because if we are not going to use microservice architecture, so this may not be the exact plan we are going to do. But I think we still have to do kind of the authorization authentication around the services, no matter what. So I think we put another sub item over there. Let me see if it's basically this is related to the identification. Yeah, that is a one line skip one line below the identification. I think probably this one and the one we are talking about, those are kind of related work items we need to work on. So I think probably at least we can have some kind of a design document or some guidelines to do that for the next release.
Actually, I'm confused about this item. Maybe Tingyu or Brian, you can add more. For me, when we mentioned DevOps, it's more something during our build pipeline phase, you know, continuous integration, continuous deployment, that sort of thing.
Or signing, right? Signing artifacts in DevOps.
Oh, okay. So this is related to signing our build artifacts. Okay.
I don't know. Is it to you? I'm not sure. Like what I thought this was we talked about this a little bit yesterday when we talked about whether or not we were going to support distributed services. And I thought we had said that really the one use case we were going to support was distributed device services. And so we wanted to then secure all the communication between a device service and anything it had to talk to on EdgeX.
And I think that's a different item, Tony.
Okay.
Wait, where is that fellow?
Okay, so is this solely about making sure that code that gets run on the box is code that is supposed
legit
to run on
code? I think that was my sense. And then long ago when we had discussed this, we had said something like the Docker professional engine, the enterprise version of it, had some kind of security thing to check for signatures.
Okay, and James just said that build artifacts are signed today. As are our snaps. I guess the question is, does the community version of Docker check those signatures? Does that require you to run enterprise Docker? Does anybody know?
Checking. Googling.
That's a question we do not.
We can take that offline.
Yeah, and by the way, we're not signing anything that are published Docker images today.
We're not. Okay. What are we signing then?
The git tags, the commit hashes.
Got it. Okay. So really, is this about whether or not we want to sign our Docker images, Ting Yu and Malini?
Okay, then that means my understanding over there about the identification management part, so that is still a separate issue. So it's not over under this one. So
okay.
I missed that.
Yeah, identities for microservice communications. I do believe that Tony is right, is that this was intended to talk about image signing, yes.
Okay, then we probably have to split the sub-item out as well. Sorry about that.
Yeah, there are some limitations to the tooling that we've adopted through the Linux Foundation for that are discussed, have been discussed within the DevOps working group a couple times now, where there are some incompatibilities with that sigil tool that's used for the signing with the current version that we're trying to get supported with Python 3. So we're kind of in a holding pattern with anything related to signing. I would almost punt this type of scope until we understand what the Linux Foundation is going to do with this.
And we talked about this one before too, Gang. There isn't anything that prohibits somebody from signing their own, right? And I'd almost prefer it that way. You know, if I'm IoTech, I'm probably going to want to sign with my tokens and things. Why would I want one coming from EdgeX at large? Or am I mistaken?
Well, it's only if somebody really was going to run the reference EdgeX images, right, in production, they would want to, you know, they might want a signature on those. But yeah.
So they're going to trust us for that?
Well, that's one way to do it. Some customers may not and may want to create their own images. So I don't know. I mean, this seems to come up all the time and we always seem to kind of punt it. Mm-hmm. We punt it for good?
I'm asking the question. I'm not trying to lead the witness, but
Jim, to your point, I can see sometimes like a service provider might supply some containers that they sign. Like let's say you're a vendor of some device service for let's say GPS or whatever, and you might be using the rest of the images from EdgeX upstream, and then you might want your LFED signature there.
Tony, do we sign snaps, or do you guys sign snaps before they go in the store? Or
we push snaps to the store; they're signed by the store.
So, Tony, I have a question for you—a conceptual question, I guess. Is this something that you think should be the responsibility of EdgeX as far as running it, or of the orchestration and deployment solutions as far as they should not be deploying the images and instantiating them if they are not signed and if the signature doesn't match?
I mean, it's a lot of work, right? And that's part of how we implemented snaps. I think it's part of how Docker implemented Docker Hub, but only if you run enterprise, right? So they want money.
It is something Open Horizon provides out of the box.
It is something you provide out of the box.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay. So so if Open Horizon were to distribute EdgeX, does that mean that you re-sign or you sign the EdgeX artifacts?
Meaning we would not deliver and run the images unless the signature matched.
So they're going to check it. So they're like Docker Enterprise. Cool.
Very much. Yeah. If I understand this correctly, yes. But so the question is this the type of thing we would expect any orchestration solution to provide? Or is this something where you need to have a catcher on the other end, meaning EdgeX would need to agree because you may be deploying and running workloads within the context of EdgeX Foundry's SMA, let's say. So does the SMA need to support this functionality as well?
I think we should rely on deployment mechanisms to do this because it's a lot of work to implement.
Sure. Okay.
But that's just my opinion. I don't know how others feel about it, but it is a lot of work to do this. You've got key management issues and key ownership issues, and there are many ways to do it. So.
So then, Jim, I think a thing to put here is like we punt the testing and verification, and then when James, Greg, and all get some response from LF Edge and they adopt maybe a new tool that signs, then we keep those signatures.
Right, but you'd still need Docker would have to be able to consume those signatures, right? James, when you're talking about the LF signatures, isn't that for the Git tags?
Supposedly that tool, that signing, that sigil tool can do tags as well as images, but okay. We have never to this point signed any images that have been published to Docker Hub.
Okay. So maybe we keep this a yellow as something, you know, keep it as a yellow as like, maybe at some point if we get the capability to do it, it discuss it again, whether it makes sense.
So does anybody on this call, and in particular, I'm asking my own company, so guys like Steve Austin, is anybody on this call, do they want EdgeX to do this? In particular, if you've got an implementation, would you want EdgeX to do this?
We sign our own images.
Yeah,
we rebuild the entire stack and we sign it. We do that internally.
I mean, I'm okay to keep this yellow if somebody on the call is telling me, I really want EdgeX to do this. I'm of the opinion we strike this if we're of the thought that, hey, this is, you know, somebody who is a user. If you want the images signed, you get them signed.
I would say strike it, because I think for it's not necessarily, you know, for us to do a bunch of work in the product for it, it's not really our core competency.
I agree. And as well, we've had the discussion within the context of the DevOps working group. We've asked the Linux Foundation if they've actually made this a hard requirement, and there is none.
Okay.
And if we're not going to sign Docker images on Docker Hub, do we even need to publish images to Docker Hub? People can get the latest build off of Nexus. Why are we even publishing a Docker Hub, you know, if we're not going to sign?
I agree with Brian's point there. I mean, shouldn't we put a stamp? I mean, not today, someday.
Docker Hub is the de facto standard. People go to Docker Hub to get images. They wouldn't know to go to Nexus. So
it's also part of your marketing and your branding.
Yeah.
So agree. Publishing to Docker Hub makes sense. I mean, that's the de facto repository. But then does it make sense for us to sign and put a stamp? Like,
no, like we're saying
built with pride by EdgeX type of stuff.
Yeah, I think we all just collectively said no, Millennium, which why we made that red.
Brian, did you collectively say no? I mean, did you individually say no?
I'm kind of the opinion if we're going to publish Docker Hub, we should sign it. But
I don't have statistics, but I would be willing to bet that 90% of what's out there in Docker Hub is unsigned.
Yeah, that may be the case. But you know, if you're going to be pulling an image from Docker Hub, I personally wouldn't pull an image from Docker Hub. I would pull it into my locally curated repository and run it from there. But if I go to pull it from Docker Hub, I'd want it to be signed.
Okay.
Just speaking for myself.
Then I'm feeling like Brian, and I'm going to check on this because as a company.
Let me do this. Can I suggest? Okay, we leave it yellow.
Okay.
But this is a good topic. Let's get some user feedback.
Okay. Right,
on this.
But I guess one thing to call out, right, is if we do this, does the community edition of Docker validate signatures? I don't think it does.
It doesn't.
Okay. So we should at least, like, right, if we pursue this, make sure that is advertised. And it sounds like we also have a dependency on the Linux Foundation to get their sigil signing stuff working. So.
Yep. Let's leave it yellow. I'm okay with that. To Brian Malini's point, I'm okay with leaving it there. But I would want some more empirical evidence and feedback that somebody is saying, I really want that. Is that fair?
Mm-hmm. And then, wait, any item like that, We have to have some owners. I will check in VMware what our thought process here is. Brian, would you also check with some others?
Yes. I can only give you feedback what Intel does.
Just at least two company positions. Yeah. And then we can ask around more.
Cool. Next up, thank you, Malini.
Yeah, next one, that's what I added recently. So based on my opinion or my experience, so lacking of the identification within the AJAX, that is kind of the pin for the security side. Security is all about the trust. So current here, if we don't know who to trust, that doesn't make sense to do any security stuff over there. To have a trust, you have to have identification over there. That's why I just listed the item over here, identification management. We probably have to think about how to just build our identification model for the AJAX, identify what kind of roles we have within the AJAX as architecture level. Then we can just kind of start building our trust level, building our security boundaries, all the stuff will be follow up.
So because forgive me for the newbie question here, but really what we're talking about here, Tingyu, is adding role-based security to AJAX. Is that what you're suggesting?
Not necessarily role-based security, but kind of identification for the entities within the AJAX. For example, we have to identify, we have the microservice. The microservice itself is identity. We have to have kind of the user group, if we have to define that. The user groups, you have the identification over there too. So currently, another example is for the API V2 version. If we are going to just stamp the request ID within the incoming request, the request ID itself is kind of the identification as well. How to manage all those identification, that is the question currently.
But I think though Jim's question was, and this is also the way I would phrase it, you know, in reviewing Brian's document, identification management is a requirement in order to be able to do security between services, mm-hmm. right? So really the requirement is like, do we want to do security between services? And this was a discussion we had yesterday about if everything's running on the same box, do you need to do security between the services? Or do you only need to do it when one of the services actually is on a separate machine? And I thought that's where we
left it. Yeah. Okay. I agree.
So is that discussion that we're having right now part of this one we already said was green because we need it for device services to core and application services. And Brian was going to give a readout forthcoming about how that might be done, what that starts to look like, and would that not, you know, part of that might or might not, depending on what you guys determine, include identification management? Correct. Or have we got it wrong?
Yeah,
I think that's a part of the question here.
Okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to put a strike through that and say covered under
security, yeah.
Same with that one. The PKI is part of that communications security.
What's this one?
So right now, we generate a cert for external Kong. This is an enhancement to allow someone to bring their own cert.
Yep. Okay, that one makes sense. BYO cert.
It's for external only, for the outward facing.
Sneak in more of those acronyms, Jim.
So is this something that we think is probably, I would assume you want to provide users the ability to do that. So I would assume this is in scope or potentially in scope. Yeah. Am I mistaken there, Brian?
Yeah, I don't know how many people are actually asking for it, but I think this is one of the limitation of the way we're doing it. It'd be nice to know to have someone come and say, yeah, that's a good idea or not.
I would assume anytime you're talking about certs, most people aren't going to really tell you they need it. But as soon as you give them, okay, here's Kong, we've got the cert, the first thing they're going to say, oh, can I, you know, I want to use my own cert. And so if our answer is you can't do that, that's going to be ugly.
That's probably good analysis. I don't think it's that much work. Because right now we got a cert in the cert store. The only thing is you just need to add some attributes to say whether or not we replace it if it's already there or whether it's user supplied and always use it type thing.
I have you on recording, Brian. Oh, that's not that much work. All right. I think we move that into green and it's in our planning discussions unless anybody has any other.
Brian, didn't we have like cert import and CA import already?
Yes. That is, let me think here. That is not for the external cert though.
So do I have it? Do I have another
external cert and internal cert here?
So another one? Internal is from microservice to microservice communication. External is what's sitting on the outside of
Kong. Okay.
So I would assume then the internal cert stuff is part of what we'll have to cover under the service comms, correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Next one.
That one is right now the secret store is unsealed as part of the security secret store setup. And I think it would be useful to make security secret store a little less monolithic and maybe just moving the secret store initialization and unsealing to its own little daemon.
So, but if it's secret store setup now, what would you call it? What would you call the new daemon?
I have no idea.
Pre-setup.
Well, I mean, help me, like, so I know like secret store setup today, right, does the token file, right? Does invokes token file provider. So you're basically saying it right now it's doing a bunch of things and you'd like to separate those out into separate stages.
Why would we want to separate that? Because you're going to replace one or the other independent of the other?
So I think I have some incomplete thoughts on the setup and initialization of the security subsystem. Is that I can't, it's very hard for me because I haven't fully thought it out, but it's like we're told to run and we start running and then we say, well, we can't really run yet because we haven't done this type of setup, and we haven't run yet because we haven't done this kind of setup. And usually when you're running like a Docker-based service, you know, your databases are already set up, your TLS is already set up, and you start running services in a secure configuration. And what we do is we start running services, and then we're expected to go from a insecure configuration to a secure configuration as we're executing. And this is one of those things that I think would help with that.
So my take on all that, Brian, is that's great. If you guys think that we need to maybe do that, let's think that through. But that's really more of an internal concern at that point from what I'm hearing. And I think that just goes back to the work group. And I'm not saying that this isn't green or that it isn't something we do in Hanoi, but I would look to you guys, since it seemed more like an internal matter, to work through that and figure it out. But it's not something we would actually build into the planning cycle. But you guys tell me if I'm wrong there.
No, I don't think that's really customer visible.
It's tech debt.
This is more like a refactoring or kind of improvement.
Got it. I mean, so do you guys, is this something you're like, nope, this is a real problem, we need to make sure we get this done, then let's put it green under tech debt. If you're like, well, I kind of got to work through this a bit more, I'm not exactly sure how we're going to do this, but to me is, okay, back to committee it goes, you guys figure it out, and you get back with us when you've got some ideas.
I'm more leaning towards that.
Okay.
Yeah, we may know more at Code Freeze, too. I mean, I worry, you know, we we're close to like pulling config seed, and we're even, you know, now it's even more asynchronous. So
yeah.
Okay.
That's what I was hoping that wasn't what Lenny's issue was. Thank God.
Yeah.
Cool. Next up, Tingyu.
Yep. That's why that is currently we do not have the TLS protection between the database con and the con itself. So this is to just establish the protection between the communication channel.
And who holds the cert there? Is it Postgres that holds the cert, or is it con?
No. Right now we do not have the cert for the database. So once we have the CA established as a Brian work, so we can just distribute the cert for both of them. So right now we have the cert for the con, but we do not have that for the database.
Right. But what I'm asking is, is it one way TLS, or are you?
Yes, one way TLS.
Okay. So who's the server?
Postgres.
Okay. Thank you.
Do you guys tell me
how come Kong doesn't support this out of the box?
It does, but we're not provisioning a TLS cert on Postgres right now.
Okay.
Which is pretty important because Postgres mm-hmm. has all the OAuth tokens in it.
True.
Okay.
So
yeah.
You guys have got this as could be handled by the item below, which back to service-to-service communication. So is that what
it
we're
could
talking
be,
about?
Yeah.
Here?
Yeah, no. This is a part of that.
It's a general case, right? There's another internal services that really needs TLS.
Brian, wouldn't this also be part of that pre-setup thing?
It would be so part of the pre-setup as well, yes.
Yeah, so before, even if we don't have service-to-service encryption, if in the pre-setup state we set this up, then from then on at least some important pathways are protected.
Yep, that's true too.
So back to just.
Yeah, I mean, I think, Jim, this is green, right? This is a specific thing we know really we need to do TLS to Postgres, kind of a special case. Well, just as a special case in that Postgres is like a third-party dependency versus, right, one of our services.
Yep. Okay.
So what about the console using by vote? Should we do the certificate as well on the console itself?
It is under the technical debt. I believe one of the items we have.
Okay.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I saw that somewhere.
Like very similar to this. Type of thing.
Yep. Check console. Nope. Is that it?
Nope.
Okay. It is inside our icebox, so probably we didn't carry that over.
Should I put that here as part of this?
I would prefer to have that into the technical data section, not.
Yeah, okay. I think console's its own beast, right? Secure console.
That is we have to consider a lot of. Issues over there.
Okay, we'll come back to that in a second. So let's clean that one up. So we got that green. Service communication.
We
already covered it.
Yep.
All right. Tech debt to you. So what is it about console we need to secure?
Yes. So we were discussing about this topic in the past, and I think this is something we have to do. Just not sure if we have enough time to finish that for the next release. But as Brian mentioned just now, the console right now, it is not being protected over the communication. So that's something we have to address sooner or later.
Do we do any authentication authorization to console, like when we inject configuration?
No, we don't.
Yeah, so it's like a big topic.
Yeah, it's a prerequisite to have the general service-to-service communication since the service location information itself is in console.
Right.
Right. If we get untrustworthy information out of console, then secure it, you know, we're securing garbage.
And sounds like this is a big task, though. So from what I heard from Tingyu, yellow, or is this something boy, that's a big gaping hole. We need to consider that sooner versus later because we're in trouble.
I think the latter. Right. If we, I mean, you know, to Brian's point, if we want to be able to support distributed device services in a secure way, and we don't have consoles secured, seems like a hole.
Agreement or not?
I agree with that.
We may not get it done, but I think we definitely.
That's right.
One minute. Before we, I mean, this is in the pre-setup phase. If we lock down all communications to local host, does that at least tell us while we're setting up, we have some level of security, at least we're in the box only? I mean, I'm just thinking, I was watching this video on how you do things clean and sterile, okay? You do one level of squirt and spray the whole table, then you move from side A to side B. So I'm thinking of this pre thing is like, okay, I washed my hands, I got the spray, and then I'm going to make things cleaner and cleaner. Yeah.
Limiting it to local host is not secure enough because you have no guarantee that other services or processes are not running on the same host.
Depends on what you're running on, but yes.
Exactly. So let's do this. I think we've determined this is in scope for discussion around planning.
Yeah.
I think this one sounds like a big enchilada, and so I'd like to have somebody start to outline what this starts to look like. To Tony's point, maybe we don't get it done in Hanoi. Well, then what does that mean, and you know, what do we do to make steps toward it? So can I get somebody from the security work group to sign up to be kind of the organizer for a plan and read out on this one?
And Brian, don't sign up. You have enough on your plate. You have many big enchiladas.
So Malini, thank you very much for taking that one. If you're not going to volunteer somebody else.
Ding you, I volunteer you.
You can switch to the sequence of the name next time. The first, Malini, second, so we have another combination.
Next up.
Okay, the next one, that is create use the per service for talking the service. So this is a part of the follow-up of our current implementation. I think this, we are going to rely on either Brian or Jim Wang for the work. So I'd like them to just kind of champion about the information here.
Is this not already done?
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought we did some of that. I thought you did some of this for service by service, Lenny.
Per service vault tokens are done.
Right, and we have a issue just to add the environment variable processing.
Oh yes.
But done, right?
Jim, go ahead.
I think that was going to get done for Geneva.
Yeah, the pie is done as well, right?
I think the pull request. I don't know if the pull request has been approved yet, but it's out there.
It is closed already.
So, okay, yeah, it's already in. Okay, yeah. Cool.
We probably can just give some example there, then how to use it. It's pretty simple to add the environment variable in the Docker Compose of a worker.
And this is basically about extending Vault tokens to new device services and application services?
Yep. Well, the original was to create per service tokens, and then the follow on was to have a way to extend it. Yes.
New ones.
Right. The per service token is done and And then
it's done now too.
This is a PR. Yep. Okay.
Black box tests.
We still have a PR or not PR. We still have an issue open for this problem. I think that was being covered this morning about during the TSC meeting.
Yeah, Cloud mentioned.
Yeah, Cloud mentioned that. I believe that is a part of the work we have to handle because based on the progress on our side, sometimes we've seen the black box is not working as expected. So this will be kind of like an ongoing work or item.
So do the daily black box not test this way with security? Are they not?
I think they test with security on, but they don't test the negative. Isn't that right, Tinya? And I see Andy Foster's online. Is that what we're talking about here? Is that we need to be able to test the negative that when you when you have it on and you don't have the right credentials, you're not able to get access. Or am I mistaken?
I thought it was a bug. Well, I thought this was working, but it was a, there's a bug in it. Oh, it stopped working.
Okay, I'm trying to test my PR with security on black box tests, but I'm on Windows, Docker for Windows, so I'm running into some issues when it tries to create the token, get a new token for, so it can call the API. So it's trying to call the APIs through Kong right now.
Right, but that's a positive test, right? You've got right. security on, you've got the right tokens, you're just trying to make sure it works. I thought that this issue was, because it stemmed from way back when we were in the Phoenix meeting, we had all those issues, that the need was we needed to have black box tests so that security is on, but you have the wrong tokens. Now let's try and hit it. Does it deny you access?
Well, yeah, it should, but back then it was, weren't using the gateway. They were still using the exported ports.
So what is our technical debt? What are we actually asking for? If it's just a bug that, I mean, yes, but that is technical debt. We have to fix it, but I'm not considering that part of our planning. We just have to fix bugs. But is there something explicitly we need to start to work on here? Is it negative testing? Is it something more than a bug we're talking about here? Or we don't know.
I would say this is probably kind of adding more testing case, like I mentioned, for the negative. Because the positive testing, it's already over there.
So let's do this. Can I assign you to just the task of trying to figure out, do we have any kind of negative testing in place? And if that's what our ask is here,
yeah.
And provide that the readout, and then we can determine whether or not we need to add or not.
Sure, I can do that.
It might be something that cloud already has done. So let's kind of take a look at that. And I'll put that as green because it could be an important issue, but let's get a readout on that. Next one, Tingyu.
The next one, that is how to implement the HTTPS within Ajax. And still that is a part of the service to service communication.
Yep, so that's kind of done, right? Or I should say done, but it's already been talked about.
Yes.
All right, how about the next one?
The next one, I think this is almost a similar, the kind of role-based security across our, Melini, did you put some notes in your?
And all I said is like, we at least might want to have two groups, like admin and normal user. And then, there was some work, Trevor and all might be aware of it, where they were trying to integrate Lightwave for some role-based access. But this is something I think we should start giving some attention and love to.
It looks like this is, I mean, are all these dashes like sub-elements under this?
Well, that's not.
They're all the little dots are all high level items.
Yeah, I don't think they are. I think it's just the formatting.
I think it's kind of a badly organized, but really we got a whole bunch of things that are container security. We actually got three of them. There's three things in container security, and maybe we ought to just do a bullet for that, which is no new privileges on containers, make Docker images read only, and make them run as non-root users. Those three stories under container security.
What does no new privileges on containers mean?
No, like sudo and being able to basically get new capabilities. It's basically the ability to escalate privilege inside of container.
So are you advocating that we do a scan for all our current code?
No, these are all Docker. These are all these are changes to Docker files or changes to the Docker compose.
Okay.
With requisite testing.
Brian, those three, right? Brian? Right.
Yep.
Okay. So is this something we want to think about for Hanoi? Is this a future item?
I think those are important, but I would like to kind of defer them to at least that's not in within the top
Could route. This be something somebody does, if it's a company like IoTech and we're producing our own, is this something we could do on our own for a while until we figure it out internally?
These are not hard to do. So, I mean, they're just settings in the compose files for the second two. Well, I don't know about the first one, right?
I think we need to do it and test it and be sure everything works.
It's not going to be possible for all of them, but it'll be possible for a lot of them.
Sorry, I don't understand. Is this talking about the containers that comprise EdgeX Foundry or yes. containers that EdgeX's SMA would start?
This is everything EdgeX in the compose file.
This is the referenced container images we're publishing, Joe.
Thank you. That clarifies okay. it.
But it's not the images. It's running of those images.
Right.
So okay. it's compose switches, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is just standard good practices mm-hmm. for to have in your compose file.
Right. But you can't enforce it.
But we can put it in our reference compose
file. Oh, you put it in the compose yeah. file. And if it breaks, you might have to make a code change to make it work.
But. So I'm gonna put this one as yellow. If it's something that somebody can do via a compose file, this to me is nice to have, a stretch goal. It's something that the individual adopter could use. If we can get to this, great, but it doesn't seem to me to rise to the level of something we need to concern ourselves immediately. Is that fair or not fair?
Yeah,
I think out of the box, our reference should be a little more secure.
And that's fine. We've got a lot of stuff on your plate. And my thinking is, if it's part of the compose file, it's not something we need to start thinking about coding for. If to Lenny's point, it's easy enough that even Jim White could do it in a compose file, I'm not of the opinion that rises to a level of a task that you guys need to be absolutely concerned with this release, because I think we got a heck of a lot of work and security to do that is something you have to do because I can't do it. Is that fair or not fair?
I'm all okay with that. So
I'm not okay with that. I think if this is low-hanging fruit, let's knock this fruit off. I'd like to prioritize this. Brian, what do you think?
I'm not volunteering. I'm not signing up to do it. I got enough on my plate already. But
I have Deanna looking at some of these things now.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, then she's also, I think, talked to you a couple of times. So.
Okay, so let's do this. I'll put it in green.
Okay.
But when it comes time for our planning meeting, I'm going to be hard and fast with you guys.
Okay.
We don't have a real good track record of delivering all the stuff we're going to say we're going to deliver. We're getting much better, but I'm going to be hard on you guys. Say, make it in scope. Let's make okay. sure it's in scope. Is that fair?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Back to this one, because this one stuck through. Is this something we need to take care of, or what is this guy hanging out here doing?
I don't think so for this release, personally.
What's that, the role-based security?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think leave that is yellow. Agreed.
Okay. Next one, Tinyu.
One that is eliminate the remaining dependency on the core. That is, I think from here until the end of the list, those are coming from our icebox of the project. So the first one that is, we were trying to just remove the curl and the JQ because right now we are relying on them to just send a request for the health and dependency check. So the purpose of this one is to just remove those dependency.
Are you going to rewrite in another language, or how would you do curl and JQ functions in a shell script without curl and JQ?
Cool.
Well, that is an issue that we are opening because we have so many dependencies over there. We do not have a solution. So I cannot answer the question here. That's one of the issues we have currently.
No, Tony, to your question about replacing curl, we don't have to then have it in our Docker.
We did this for the health check. With Anthony rewrote the one to check the service health, and they wrote a utility that cool took base, a place yeah. curling JQ. I think we just need another utility that does a similar thing, but in a slightly different way, because checking the service health of Kong is slightly different than other services because it has its admin port and things like that. So it's kind of like technical debt. It would reduce the amount of places where we need to have do these APKs installs and stuff on some of these containers.
So is this something we're considering for this release? We need it for this release, or at least we need to think about it for this release?
I don't think we need it for this release. I think this is
too tightly coupled with configuration.
I need more time to think on that one personally.
Yeah, look, guys, I think you've made a valid statement here, but holy cow, that's not like...
But isn't any application tightly coupled to its configuration? that just kind of like, what does this really mean?
There are an explanation within the issue opened by Brian. So Brian just lists quite a few observations within the issue. So we are not going to go over all those items within the issue, but you can just take a look over there to see what is the point.
So Brian, is this something we need to consider for this release? Are there specific things you think we need to consider with regard to how we are coupled to configuration?
I think this might be at some point lumped up with the concerns about like bootstrapping console and things like that.
Okay, I'm gonna leave that in your guys' icebox. But unless you guys come to the planning meeting and give us more details, I think it stays that way.
Icebox should be blue color.
We have a 31 over there. The next one, I think we discussed that during the core working group meeting as well. So basically we have to come up, we already covered that. So I think I sent that, someone else sent that for the research already. So this should be a green.
So if this is developing developing a process. So do we have somebody online to tell us what that's going to look like for the meeting?
Well, I think the idea or the discussion, the result of discussion is we have to come to some kind of the procedure, probably step 1, 2, 3, things like that. So whenever any developer tries to introduce a third party component, so they can just follow the procedure to check. For example, check if there's a CV associated with the component, if there's security flaw.
Is that this?
Yes, I think that's just the one.
All right, so let me do this, guys. I'm gonna just take that out of consideration. We got that covered above. Is that fair?
This one's also covered. This is that external certificate thing, right, Brian?
Yes. Well, it's sort of. Yeah, it's a kind of different aspect of that same thing. Yeah, we're taking 12 steps to do something that can take a configuration file entry. it could be done in an environment variable. Yeah.
So this goes back to this one, Brian?
Probably the BYO cert. Probably.
Yeah, bring your own cert. And add streamline. Yeah.
Okay. That one, is that part of the whole TLS and Kong discussion we had before or not?
It's similar. This is similar to the Postgres one, but this applies to the Kong admin port.
So is that part of the same work or not?
Separate work.
Okay. Separate work, a similar idea.
So it sounds like that would be green then, because that's going to be something needed as part of that?
Yes, we can do that.
Okay.
So that's external request for that one.
This one, and I did the research and talk with the original author of the issue and ask him to try that, but I haven't got a response yet.
So chorus is required if you're doing a JavaScript AJAX type request across domains.
That's what he wants. He wants to write a pure JavaScript admin UI.
Yep. Then chorus is required.
Mm-hmm. Who's requiring this?
It's a specification AJAX calls.
No, yeah, that I get. But you were saying Brian was saying, yeah, who's the customer? Where's this requirement coming from?
He's from Typical.
Oh, okay. This is the Typical guy. Okay.
Yeah.
I know we've had to do the same thing for us at Intel. If we have a UI, we just add cores ourselves and modify it.
So is this something we need to think about? How easy is that to do, Mike?
It's easy enough. It's a few lines to just enable it for any, which is not recommended if you're going to, you know, give it out. You know, it takes a little bit of work to make sure that you support configuration for it, whitelist domains. A little bit of work if you're going to do it properly.
I think our code already enabled that, but somehow when his name is Ricardo, the developer, I asked him to test that. So he got a failure message. So I asked him to send me the failure message or debug log, but haven't got that yet. So kind of waiting feedback status.
So does that mean this is cool?
Yeah, we can just do that. Green. Or yellow. Okay.
Okay. This sounds like refactoring internal to me. Is this something that rises to the level of such a big item or needs so much discussion that it's a planning item?
Again, I don't think it needs to be a planning item personally. I think when we do the PKI issue, it'll be solved as along the way.
Okay. Everybody okay with that?
So this is coming from the last release. At that time, we were using the third party, the password generation, and we all agree this will be kind of issue we need to address in the future.
How far in the future? Do we need a Hanoi future, or could it be something that, you know, people could do on their own?
This is mainly for the MongoDB database generation. Since we are going to get rid of the MongoDB at all, I don't think we need to just add this one.
Redis is going to have one. Yeah.
We can probably use the built-in vault passcode generation to create the credential for Redis. So if that is the case, we don't need to implement any of the database password generation algorithm from our side. So that will be an option for us.
That tells me this is yellow.
Red.
Or red.
Isn't it?
I like what you're thinking, Reddy. Does anybody else disagree?
Red.
Okay, the next one, that is item method to retrieve metadata inserted by file.
We don't need provider. To do that for this release. I put that one in because I'm adding some metadata into the tokens to say what service it belongs to. I don't have a use right now to add a method to retrieve that. So I'll just content to let that sit on the backlog until I know for sure.
Okay. Is this back to the console and checking access authentication, or is this something different?
I'd like this one to go away. This basically says security secret setup gets its settings from console and registry. But I think that this needs to run before console even starts if we want to secure console. So therefore, we wouldn't be able to pull console for settings if we're trying to secure console.
Everybody okay
time
travel?
Agreed. Can't time travel?
Nope.
Go ahead. Get it now before you use it.
Very good. All right. Anything else, security team?
I have one that was, I signed up to do an ADR for the secrets provider, which I haven't gotten to. Anybody remember this one? It was about wrap making it an abstraction, because right now the GoMod secrets really is not a full abstraction, and this would allow us to have you know, secure and non-secure.
I remember this. Okay.
Yeah, so you don't have, you can just say get me the secret and we'll have, you know, if security's on it goes to vault, if security's off it gets it from configuration. So is this something we still want? We've implemented this ability in the App Services SDK. It'd be basically, I would just write an ADR that explains what's going on there. And
we use that code elsewhere, right?
No, we don't. Oh, I would write an ADR that would basically talk about how we would move this into GoMod Secrets.
Okay. That would be nice, I think. But you're doing the work.
I would write the ADR still, but, you know, I think.
So let's do this, Lenny. How about we do this and we do this?
Yeah, I like that.
Is that fair?
Yeah, because I, you know, with the looming code freeze, I don't see myself getting to the ADR.
Right, yeah.
Okay. Anybody else have anything else to add on the security? Alrighty, gang, we blew through kind of the second break time trying to get through the security stuff. We only have about 20 minutes left. Is everybody okay just trying and cover one more set of stuff here from system management? And then DevOps, we could try and do that in the DevOps working group coming up.
Yep, that's no problem.
Certification, do we have Rodney on? Rodney, can we cover this in your working group?
We can do that.
Vertical solution, Henry, can we cover that in your working group? Maybe Henry's dropped off. He was on. I don't see him. I'll check with Henry and Camillo. And then Andy, we can cover this in your working group?
Yeah, no problem.
And then Joe, we can try to cover kind of road mapping. I think you were already planning to do that and kind of as kind of part of your meeting. Is that fair?
That's fine.
Yep. Yeah. So that leaves us trying to maybe wedge in, where to go, system management. And I don't see Mike Lester on. I don't think he was going to be in the meeting. So we could try and work through some of these. So CLI improvements, I think that is now in Melini and Diana's camp. Do we have, other than trying to get it into out of holding and into the regular org, do we have specific improvements we think need to be made to the CLI?
I think we should put that off for now. I mean, we want to first make sure we have addressed all the concerns Mike Johansson raised and make it even worthy of inclusion. So let's deal with the rest later.
Okay, fair enough. Metrics collection. So this is a big topic we've been talking about. To me, this could be one of the big features of Hanoi, but I know it could be a lot of work too. I think we'd have to, you know, break this down to a crawl, walk, run. What are people's thoughts here?
Well, like we talked about in the last system management working group, there's several different ways to collect metrics, and those metrics are relevant based on how you're deploying the services. So are we just right now trying to think of EdgeX as distributed device service, everything else running in the core? Is that how we're looking at this? Because what we showed as an example was, you know, a way that you could do it if you were targeting a cloud-based deployment. But if we're not going to do it that way, and we want to keep EdgeX's focus on the smaller side or towards the edge, thinner edge for now, do we sort of, how are we going to report on those statistics? How do we envision exposing them? It's going to affect what we decide to capture. I mean, I think decisions that we make without a point of view, we start to then just take a point of view by default, which I'm not sure positions us the right way.
So based on what we talked about, Trevor, well, how about this as an option to think about this? So for Hanoi, we put in planning that we add GoMod messaging to all services, and that we provide a means for a service to push through message to some endpoint, but we just leave it at that. that allows the user to start to have something they connect to the endpoint. What that is not universal at this point, but allows us at least the ability to collect metrics individual to a service, and whatever metrics you want, the individual service can determine that. But we provide the means to do that. And I think we also have to have some configuration in place to say whether you want that pushing of metrics on or off.
Also, I think there's a big chunk missing here would be the instrumentation to collect those metrics in the code.
Jim, is that AER approved?
No, we're still getting comments, yep.
Okay, so that's a new one on me, so I'll definitely have to take a look.
Trevor, what are your thoughts about that? Essentially, by the ADR, we do just the first half of what we talked about. And to Lenny's point, instrumentation in every service to collect what you want. And that essentially says service providers, you can choose, you know, to collect one thing if you want to just try it out, or collect many things.
We'd have to have a more detailed discussion on that. I mean, you know, your choice of how to capture those metrics could be different. We used Prometheus. You could use something else.
But that doesn't say you have, there is nothing that prevents you from doing any of those.
Right. I mean, wouldn't it use just the executor mechanism to do that?
Could. I'm not saying we wouldn't. At this point, we're not dictating it. All we're doing is essentially instrumenting the service, put in place the GoMod messaging, put in place the configuration to say, please send it to this pipe. After that, nothing out there in EdgeX does anything with it or requires you to do anything with it. It's up to the implementer.
But now we've got a point of view that we're going to publish these things. And there are ways to deliver the metrics through a poll. And so now we've taken the point of view that, okay, we're going to be publishing metrics. So that means going forward, if someone wants to instrument EdgeX through a poll, now they can't do that.
Yeah, but they could put an application service in that collects them and then provides that pool.
Or you could send them, you could push them to your own service, or you could push them to the SMA and pull from there.
Is this all in the ADR, guys? Or are we okay?
Well, at least the options are, not that we've made any decisions there.
Okay.
But what I'm hearing you say, Trevor, is I think this is half baked. We need to think about it more.
Yes. That is what I'm saying. And again, I don't know. I need to talk to you offline, Jim.
Okay. Well, let's put it, it sounds to me like we don't have enough support to do this yet. So at least from that standpoint, from a planning perspective, let's put it in yellow. And if we, you know, by a stretch of imagination, we get through that ADR and do more work in this area, you know, we can look at it. I think to me, this is one of those areas that as we get into production use, we're going to have to start to do more in EdgeX in this. We see it in our own customers and use cases, but let's put it on the back burner for right now.
So green would just mean that yellow means we're not going to discuss it at Hanoi planning. Green just means we're going to discuss it more and can still throw it out.
Yep, that's true. But I think there are enough reservations I'm hearing, and Trevor, I'm putting words in your mouth, so please correct me, but I'm hearing enough reservations from you that you don't even think this should be something we put in the planning discussion at this point.
I'm afraid that we're going to put ourselves in a position where, you know, we're making implicit choices. You know, we're making implicit choices because we're trying to compromise between these two points of view. And I just think that we're going to be making mistakes and
Let's work this through the system management working group for a little bit, gang. If we get to a point where we've got some sort of agreement in the next few weeks, great. We'll bring it to the topic. If we got extra time at the meeting, great. We can discuss it. This is a big one. And I am for inclusion of it, but I am not for inclusion of it at the expense of all other things. So, because it is a big item. So let's take it one step at a time. Is that okay with everybody?
Sure.
From the SMA perspective, storing metrics locally, does anybody believe this rises to the level of need right away? This is the current metrics that the SMA collects. So CPU, configuration, memory. I'll answer for everybody. I don't think so. I don't think actuation is something we do right away. I don't think alerts is something we do right away. A lot of this could be dependent on what we do for ADR 006. And this really kind of goes to ADR 6 anyways. Do we want to start to look at supporting, or not supporting, but more facilitation around Kubernetes? I'll leave the term Helm chart off there because I think several people suggested, well, Helm charts are not probably the best way to do Kubernetes type of facilitation or support nowadays. This has always been something I've been resistant to just because I felt like it was a big enchilada that we could get down into where you start to draw the line. But Kubernetes has become stronger and stronger call for by at least some of our customers. What are people's thoughts?
I mean, from Dell's perspective, yes, Kubernetes should be involved. Mm-hmm. And we should design the services for Kubernetes.
Anybody agree or disagree that this should be something we should talk about and how we facilitate that?
I think facilitating Kubernetes is a good idea. I don't think we should necessarily design specifically for Kubernetes.
No. Yeah, this would be more like what we're doing.
Right? Yep. So, yeah.
This would be more on the line of like a Docker Compose file type of thing, what I'm thinking.
Yeah, but I guess if there are also like tweaks we can make, things that, you know, maybe configurable that would make Kubernetes deployment easier, yeah.
Yeah. No argument. So, Trevor, can I put the Dell team on the line here to say what would that start to look like?
Yeah, I mean, we already have it up and running. So, yes, we know what it looks like. The problem is that there are aspects of the services that are radically different. And the other thing, too, is we've thrown out probably two or three of them. We just don't even use them.
Yeah, but we're not talking about there might be some small tweaks we make at services. What we're saying is, so if I said I want to deploy Kubernetes today, or I wanted to deploy EdgeX with Kubernetes today, what can EdgeX give me to help me with that? Like we've done with Michael Estrin's Helm chart example, would there be something on that nature where we're not necessarily changing the services, we're just saying, if you want to deploy a single instance of EdgeX, single service of EdgeX like we have today, but you want to do that with Kubernetes, at least we've got this starting block for you.
Well, just, yeah, throw them all in a single pod and there you go.
Right, but is there anything else you have to do to the reference images? Like
yes.
You need to configure them? Right, so you've got to make configuration changes to use the reference image.
Okay. And that's why we have the environmental overrides.
Yeah.
That's where it all came from when Michael was
working on that. Yeah.
Right.
And is it via Helm chart or do we, there's another technology out there. I can't remember what it was. Somebody was suggesting that we would really do that through.
Helm can use environment variables for that. I mean, I think environment variables can be used in many contexts. So he just chose to do Helms because that's, I guess, what he knew. But
I recognize that. What I'm saying is, as we asked Trevor to kind of provide us a readout on that, I assume we're not just talking about Helm charts, that there might be other technologies that would better facilitate Kubernetes support.
And no, I think,
am I wrong that?
Well, I think what we've done for the Fuji release is we simply used a Helm chart, but again, we created a fork off of Fuji and we have been making other changes to the services as well to get it to work optimally. So that's like a whole thread of discussion that we will need to engage in, and I don't think it makes sense to engage in that unless the project feels like we want to support Kubernetes and we're going to make a first class effort to do it.
Well, let me ask you this, Trevor, like when you say support Kubernetes, are you talking about cloud or edge or both?
Kubernetes is moving farther and farther out to the edge such that the thin edge is becoming thinner and thinner, where that's where you would run your device service and everything else will be, I think, in a cloud at some point, even down to the gateway level.
In theory, we'll see.
I guess I don't want this to nut roll into another discussion in high availability.
I think if there's simple things we can do that we don't already have with the services that facilitate somebody running in Kubernetes, that should be an option.
Agreed.
I'm all supportive of that. But Trevor, what I'm hearing you saying is, well, you got to do a lot of things with the services, and that's starting to sound to me like this discussion is going to open up or reopen up a discussion on high availability concerns and all that. And I don't think we want to go down that route yet.
Okay.
So are there things if I am saying I want to run EdgeX with Kubernetes, I'm not interested in high availability and things yet. Is there a way we can facilitate that?
You can just run them all as a single instance service. I mean, there's nothing stopping you from doing that, but you won't get any of the benefits of the scaling or anything like that. So, I mean, let Melini said it yesterday, just throw them all into a single pod and there you go. But you have to be able to take on all of the 12 factor stuff if you really want something that's scalable, but you don't want to talk about that right now. So I'm just, you know, I'm trying to communicate a priority from our perspective.
I got it. I recognize that. And I recognize your priority. And I also recognize, I think we discussed yesterday, while that is a potential goal long-term, not something we're putting in the scope of Hanoi. So what I'm looking for, is there somebody in our community, and maybe this is not you for this one, Trevor, is there somebody who could say, well, if we're just trying to support minimally Kubernetes users out there so they could see how to deploy EdgeX with Kubernetes, yeah, here's what we would do and here's how we could do it and lay forth a plan for how to start that conversation. Lenny, it sounds like you may have some ideas on this. Is it you that might be able to do that?
No, I'm not a Kubernetes person. I looked at it, I was like, why do I want to do that when I got Swarm?
Is there anybody I just heard a lot of people say, yeah, we should try and support or facilitate Kubernetes. Anybody have any ideas about how we do that?
There is a tool that'll convert, I think, Docker Compose file to a Helm chart.
Well, there's a tool called Compose with a K, which will generate Kubernetes configuration, but it barfs up with EdgeX Docker Compose. So I think that's why Michael may have gone down the route of doing Helm charts, because I think they're automatic tools, but it doesn't quite work well with our Docker Compose.
Okay, I will put myself on the task list here to start to at least explore this a little bit. And the readout might be as simple as, you know, already can be done and here's how you do it, or I'm not sure what I'll come up with there, but I'll start that conversation. Okay, what do we got? 3 minutes left. Tech debt on system management. Let me start from the bottom. Is this one even real anymore? Is this still a concern, or is this still an issue, capturing CPU metrics for macOS with the SMA?
Don't we have those? I thought we had those.
I thought so too. That's why I was saying, is this even an issue?
I know I added it for Windows, but I thought Mac was still an issue, but I don't know for sure.
Okay. I'll check into that.
That's probably just a simple issue sitting out there in the icebox, right?
Yeah. Well, and it came up in some meeting. That's where I got this one from. But let me just research on where we're at with that and see. Does anybody feel like this rises to the level of, gosh almighty, we got to have that? Okay. Refactor to enable operations against agent via an executor. So that's the start, stop, and restart, rather than having the SMA call in services to do this. I thought that was done already as well. Let me check with Mike Lestrin on a couple of these and guys like Akram. Default services list via configuration. So this one I think had to do with the fact that right today, if you want to add services, you're going to add a new app service, you're going to add a new device service. You essentially have to go in there, and I think you have to actually tweak the way the SMA works because it doesn't know about your service. So the idea here was, well, is there a way to say, hey, here are my services via configuration? I think that's what that one is.
Yeah, I want to say this had to do with the configuration changes that we made to normalize the service keys, which we decided was then backward incompatible, so we backed it out.
Okay, so you think this
guys,
is,
I have to drop. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Blini. So you're thinking this one is overcome by events, Trevor? Is that what you're saying?
I think it's still on the list.
Okay.
So, but again, it's a minor priority. I mean.
Yep. Yep. To do asynchronous, and we've already talked about the asynchronous stuff. I think that one has kind of been on hold right now until we figure out what to do with these. So what I'm going to do, gang, is I'm going to icebox all the, or put these all in yellow. I'll talk to Michael Lester a little bit and see if there's anything in this list that he seemed to think might rise to the level of immediate concern. Okay, gang, it is top of the hour. I know people have to run. Thanks so much for everybody, especially for those who are in the UK right now and staying up very late. I really appreciate it. We'll work through the working groups to try and finalize the rest of this. Thanks much. Anybody have any finals? All right, everybody. Have a good one. Thanks much.
Thanks.
All right. Bye.
Cheers, guys.